Thanks for tuning into the Double Take podcast. If you like what you hear, then do me a favor and share this episode with someone. And if you do that, maybe I'll even be your best friend. It's time to buzz the tower as Terrence and I are joined once again by Scott Miller. And we take a nosedive into the number one movie from 1986. Yes, of course, this is Top Gun. Who doesn't love this Tom Cruise classic? But before I make too many more puns, let's just get right to it.
2-1, you've got a pair of bogeys. 12 o'clock.
Ow! I gotta give you your dream shot. I'm gonna send you up against the best. You two characters are going to Top Gun. For 5 weeks, you're gonna fly against the best fighter pilots in the world.
There are no points for second place. Want to know who the best is? That's him, Iceman. That's the way he flies, ice cold.
I flew with the old man. You're a lot like he was. Only better.
So you're the one.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Maverick.
Maverick? Is your mother not like you or something?
What's your problem, Kazansky? Every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe.
I am dangerous.
He's a wild card. Flies by the seat of his pants.
You made a bad choice.
I got a family to think about. I can't afford to blow this.
You had to go into battle. Do you want him with you?
Just don't know.
How long?
It'll take 10 minutes.
This thing will be over in 2 minutes. Get on it.
All right, well, welcome to the Double Take podcast. Today, I have Terrence and Scott in the house. Terrence, good morning. Welcome back, as always.
Morning, Mark. Always so happy to be here with you. You can be my wingman anytime.
Oh, you know, you took my joke. I was going to say something along those lines, but...
we should probably talk before we do the podcast instead of just showing up
and we gotta plan it.
Turning the mics on.
Yep. But the good thing is we got Scott here.
Yes.
And Scott, I don't want you to worry. You stay on my wing, and I'm going to take you all the way in.
Right. I think that's really optimistic, saying that me being here is a good thing. I really appreciate that. That's very kind of you.
Listen, nice. If you're really good or really bad, it's going to make for a good episode, so it's okay. Right.
So, Scott, second time on the Double Take, first time we had you on for Office Space, which was awesome. So I just wanted to give you a second. I think we skipped over it last time, so I just wanted to kind of give you a chance to remind people what you do. I know you have a podcast. I think you have two podcasts if you still have them both running. So the floor is yours, man. Tell us about you for a moment.
Yeah, thanks. I do so many things. I admire people who have like just one job. I think that's really cool. But yeah, I have a podcast. My podcast is called Creating a Cooler World. It focuses on climate change and sustainability and conservation. And I have really cool people that I'm talking to who are doing just interesting things in those areas. I work as a leadership and executive coach. I have my own coaching business. I also work for a really cool nonprofit called District C that does basically teamwork training for high school students, teaching high school students how to work in high-performing teams. Those are my gigs.
Okay. That's awesome, man. So, yeah, we had you on the Casual Nonsense show, and I was just more fascinated by the fact that you used to jump out of planes like for a living like, as an instructor. So that's cool. What would you say, was it 3,000 jumps or 1,000 jumps? Or what?
Yeah, actually, so in total, over 8,000 skydives.
8,000 skydives. Jeez. That's 8,000 times he jumped out of a perfectly good airplane.
Yeah.
I've never seen a perfectly good airplane. People keep talking about these perfectly good airplanes. Actually, a friend of mine had a really good joke when somebody would say that. He'd say, you know, people would say, I don't see any reason to jump out of a perfectly good airplane. My friend would say, well, we don't either. That's why we use these ones.
I love it. I love it.
See, Mark, we got a good thing going, though. We sometimes do podcasts with just the two of us. Sometimes we bring on an expert in the field. So we're doing Top Gun today. We got Scott. He knows his stuff about planes. It kind of masks the fact that we're not an expert on anything. We don't know anything about anything.
Amen to that. Anyway, so welcome to the idiot show, Scott. We appreciate you bringing the intelligence here. No pressure.
Really optimistic. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you.
As Terrence said, today we were doing Top Gun. Who doesn't love Top Gun, really? This is such a iconic movie, I guess. I mean, we say that about all of our movies, but you know, they're all true statements. Terrence, why don't you give us a rundown of what for those who don't know what Top Gun's about.
Sure. Top Gun is like the naval aviation school where the top pilots get together, they compete, and they train them. There's a scene early on that tells you that the dogfighting success rate of American pilots has gone down. Like in Vietnam, it was only 3-to-1 kill ratio they had. And so they're aiming to get that back up, basically make America the best of the best again.
We will make America great again.
In the air. So you got Tom Cruise plays Maverick. He's the young hotshot, as he often is in all these 80s roles he's got. Doesn't exactly play by the rules, but he's so good that he can get away with it anyway. He's got Goose is his partner, his wingman. And yeah, they're going through flight school, and it's more than just training. It's like, it's dangerous, just the maneuvers they're doing there, as we come to see throughout the plot. And it's kind of a little bit of a redemption arc for Maverick as you go through. He's kind of comes to grips with, he's got to play by the rules a little, but they also recognize his talent. And you got Val Kilmer as Iceman, is just one of his iconic roles. Really great, satisfying movie. And I love that it's been brought back with Top Gun Maverick coming out a couple years ago, like into the consciousness a little bit more, because this movie's like 40 years old. Just a great movie.
As the airplane nerd in the room.
Yes. Should have thrown it to you to begin with, please. Actually.
No, just a little technical terminology detail. So when you're flying an airplane, your wingman is actually the pilot in the other plane flying next to you.
Oh, that's right.
You,
I actually misspoke.
Yeah.
Wing.
Yeah.
As far as you can be wingman, it's not the guy in the plane with you.
Goose is Maverick's RIO, Radar Intercept Officer. So he's actually the guy. It's really interesting. The guy in the back actually does. It's not like a co-pilot. Like, he can't fly the plane.
Right.
But he's operating all the weapon systems and monitoring where all the other enemy planes are and basically saying, hey, go that way, shoot that thing. I know somebody who actually does that for real that for real in the Navy. And she describes it as she's the one in the back with the carrot on the stick guiding the pilot around. So,
okay. Thank you for the clarification. Mark, definitely keep that in because, like I said at the beginning, I'm not an expert on anything. I'm just a guy that loves movies. So this is cool that we get a guy like Scott on here that can illuminate these kinds of things about. Because as far as the technical details, I enjoy it, but I couldn't tell you exactly what's making the plane stay in the air or any of that. So that was pretty cool. Thank you.
For the longest time, I thought that they referred to them as rear. Like, I didn't know it was Rio. And then, of course, I'm a closed caption guy. And I'm like, what's Rio? So I looked it up, and like you said, and I was like, okay, like, awesome. You know, because that was one of my questions. I was like, what's a Rio do? You know, and why does Goose have a Polaroid when he's in there? Like, I don't think that's Navy standard.
But I don't know if they ever actually answered why does he have his Polaroid camera right, with him. That's one of the unanswered questions.
You never know when you're going to be able to fly upside down over a MiG and just have a chance
inverted
to take
in
a shot. Yeah.
In a 5G dive or whatever, right? What's your thoughts on this movie? Like, what's this movie mean to you, right? You're a product of the 80s. What's your thoughts on Top Gun overall? Like, when you first saw it, when you rewatch it, like, what's going through your head?
Yeah, so I'm old enough that I actually saw this in the movie theater when it came out. I was in high school. And, you know, we've talked on Casual Nonsense. I told you a little bit about my crazy story of wanted to be a pilot in the Air Force. I was serious about it. So by the time Top Gun came out, I was actually, you know, going down that path, applying to college and stuff like that. So I think Top Gun was just like a little bit of a turbo boost of, you know, that idea that I already had about wanting to do this, as it did for many people. They said it actually, you know, there's like an 8% increase or something like that after this movie came out in people who applied to, wanted to go in the Navy to be a pilot. So I was like the prime audience member for this movie, you know, high school kid interested in planes anyway, and went to see the movie.
When we did Office Space, we talked about Mike Judge and Beavis and Butthead, and you just made me think of a skit that was on Beavis and Butthead where they did a spoof Army recruiting commercial with Beavis and Butthead. And they said, oh, join the Army. And they showed the commercial, and it was dudes drinking beers on tanks, blowing shit up. And like, join the Army, have fun, be cool. You know, like, oh, that sounds cool. You know, and it just made me think of, like, a nice recruiting video because it's probably, well, I'm sure it's nothing like that, right? But when you see this movie, you're right. You're thinking, of course I want to do that. Like, I'm going to be that guy, get to shoot down people. But it's such a low percentage of people that actually get to do what they're doing, you know?
Yeah, that's like the people who actually end up being like fighter pilots in the military. You're looking at the guys who were like all-star athletes in high school and like super good students, like not just like smart, but able to study, knew how to hit the books and grind and study. Like, that's kind of the level of physical and mental ability you need to be at to be able to be like a pilot in the Navy.
Yeah.
You know, it's really tough.
Well, that rules me out. That explains a few things about my career path. So this movie had a budget of about $15 million, and I would say that it did well beyond the profits and ended up about $355 million. Number one movie in 1986. The $355, by the way, I believe was internationally, not just domestic. But it definitely made its money, for sure. Ebert, you know how many stars he gave this?
I'm going to guess.
He's at a weird four-star scale. I don't understand.
I'm going to guess three, but I don't know. I'd be ready to believe anything right now.
Okay. What do you think he gave?
I'm going to say two.
Yeah, two and a half was the answer. There we go. So there you go. Perfect. There you go. My porridge is just right. So 86, this came out. This was the number one movie in 86. Next movies, Crocodile Dundee, Karate Kid, Back to School, Aliens. That's the top five. And let's not forget Ferris Bueller was number 10 in 86.
I was like, this list sounds familiar. We've gone through this one.
So episode 6 of the Double Take, boom, Ferris Bueller. Check it out.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
All right, this movie directed by Tony Scott. Terrence, what do we know about Mr. Scott?
Tony Scott rules. He's just an awesome action film director. Man on Fire with Denzel Washington is an amazing movie. Mm. Crimson Tide also with Denzel, Gene Hackman. Enemy of the State, Gene Hackman again. I'm kind of just 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon here. But yeah, his movies just, they always have a distinctive look and style. And like, there's just great action and just a propulsive energy to all of them. So yeah, I'm a big fan of his.
He's more like, everything you mentioned, like the 80s, 90s, blow shit up, like big scale movies. Like there's no, as far as I know, he's not doing rom-coms. You know what I mean? Who's his brother? Is Ridley Scott his brother?
Yeah.
So yeah, he did Gladiator, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, another big name
action, 80s, 90s, blow shit up classic,
guy. Yeah. You know, these guys got things done. When you see their name attached to it, you know you're going to get, I'd say big budget, but for $15 million, that's actually a smaller budget. I mean, at the time, maybe. I was reading some behind-the-scenes stuff. I was watching some videos where, you know, they had to pull strings to get on the aircraft carriers and just kind of be part of that. And it was kind of cool. It was very fascinating. Like, not enough to, I'm not going to get into everything that I was looking at, but if you get a chance to just kind of Google that and look it up, there was just some fascinating stuff going on. Like, at videos from, 1985, 86, just them on these planes and what they had to go through. So it's kind of cool. Like when you see the behind the scenes of these movies.
Well, they work kind of together with the U.S. military, right? I know they paid them. They were on an actual aircraft carrier. They were using real pilots and real planes and all that. So it had the movie feels authentic. Like obviously there's some outsized characters and personalities in it. But as far as the actual military stuff, Scott, you'll be better equipped to speak on that. But just for me, the casual viewer, it seemed pretty real to me.
Yeah, a lot of the in-air scenes, the air-to-air scenes, the flying scenes were actually filmed at the Top Gun school with actual Top Gun pilots flying the planes. Grumman is the company that, built the F-14 Tomcat, the main plane featured in the movie. And they actually built or designed a special camera pod to go on the F-14 so that they could shoot some of those in-air sequences.
That's awesome.
Where you're seeing like directly point of view from the plane, from the bottom of the plane.
Yeah.
And then they shot they used a Learjet, I think, to film some of it.
Okay.
So to be able to keep up with the planes, even flying, the fighter planes even flying slowly, they needed a Learjet to keep up with it to be able to, shoot some of the scenes. So yeah, a lot of really intensive technical knowledge and expertise and, overcoming technical challenges went into filming the movie.
With one of the interviews they showed with Tom Cruise was, they had to do a bunch of takes because, like you said, the cameras they mounted, there's a lot of scenes where he's looking over his shoulder, like looking behind you to the left or to the right. And that's not one camera doing the same. Like, there'd be one take where just keep looking over your right shoulder and then it'd have to land, move the camera. Okay, now we're just going to look over your left shoulder. So they'd take different cuts like that and kind of – it's amazing how much time goes into that when you think about – the patience and detail it takes to put these movies together. And the results are awesome, right?
It paid off because, one of the coolest things about this movie is the visual aspect. Anytime they're flying or in a dogfight or anything, like you've got the camera in the cockpit, you've got the view out in front of them, you've got the reticle, when they're targeting, like everything is like, it really immerses you in the whole
Star
thing.
Wars targeting system that they get there. That's great. So I didn't interview Tom Cruise, but I was reading interviews with him. I mean, if you follow his movies, which I know that you guys do, he's such a student of filmmaking, right? Like he likes to be involved. I mean, even like
he dives in headfirst on everything.
He really does. He really very, very similar to like Keanu Reeves and Swayze, these guys that do their own stunts. I mean, Tom Cruise is the epitome of that. Well, this was the first movie where he really did that. So they said he put it into his contract where he wanted to be part of. He wanted to be in all the script meetings. He was in all the marketing, like to figure things out. Like he didn't necessarily have a say in what they did. He wanted to be there to understand it. He wanted to learn about it. So in these meetings with these other groups that normally actors aren't in, and he's like, a lot of people like, oh, the actor's here. Like, oh, what are we going to say now? You know, and he just wanted to learn. Like, that was it. He was actually filming Legend at the time of this, which I think was Ridley Scott.
It is Ridley Scott. Yeah.
So he came to him and said, hey, my brother's got this script, whatever, you should check it out. And they talked about that a little bit. And he had the stipulations where he's like, well, like, I want to fly. Like, I want to be flying to make this movie. And they said, okay, well, cool, let's do that. And I think that kind of led to the good scenes that we're talking about. They said, well, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. It was done well. You know, I don't know how much influence Tom Cruise actually had. I mean, what he's saying in an interview and what actually happened could be two different things. But, you know, I think the proof is in the pudding from his career going forward, where he crushed everything. So,
yeah, one thing that I read was that when he wasn't yet signed on to do the movie, I guess Ridley Scott was trying to get him with his brother to do it. He went up in a plane with like an actual pilot, and the guy did all kinds of crazy maneuvers and stuff. Tom Cruise was like using the sick bag immediately, and they landed, and he's like, I got to be on this movie. I got to be a part of it. So that was all it took.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
You know, talking about like all the effort that went into and the impact the movie had, how, you know, the visual impact and everything. You were talking about the budget and the initial, you know, low, not very good critical response, right? Ebert gave it, what, 2.5 stars?
Yeah.
It's interesting, some of the things I was reading about it. So apparently there was, you know, again, the really not very favorable critical response initially, but audiences loved it. And apparently the number of theaters showing it 4 weeks after the release, the number of theaters showing it increased by 45%. Jeez. And it ended up being the highest grossing film of 1986. So you're talking about all the, you know, great films that came out that year.
Yeah.
Top Gun was the highest grossing domestic film of 1986.
Yeah. Top Gun 2 did the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so when that came out, they just took it to another level. And we'll get into the sequel, I think, a little bit after. But you're right. I mean, that's the level that movie brought. It was almost like it set the barometer, I think, for that style of movie. Like, you can blow things up, you can do different things. But when this came out, I'm not sure before 86, a bigger movie that ever came out that kind of took it to that level. You know, you didn't have, I mean, you had movies like, what was it, Firefox with Clint Eastwood, I think. Like, there were some good air scenes, but this really stepped the game up for that genre.
This kind of highlights, like, we always talk about, like, Roger Ebert or the critics' response as opposed to the audience and the box office and everything. Like, you've got certain movies that, okay, yeah, there might be critical darlings. It might win Academy Awards. This one, I think it only won for the song, right? Take My Breath Away. But it's typically...
That's the song it won for?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You weren't feeling it?
No. We're going to get to that. Don't you worry. I mean, how do you skip over Kenny Loggins? Come on, man. Jeez.
But yeah, I think it just goes to show, like, this is just like you got to be in the movie theater kind of movie. Like, I was 1 year old when this came out, so obviously that wasn't going to happen. But when Top Gun Maverick came out, I went twice in the movies, and I don't often do that. Usually it's one, and then I'll wait till it comes home. So yeah, just all the flying scenes. You got big time movie stars. Like, this is like the perfect recipe for box office smash.
So with Tom Cruise, right? I mean, this guy, I don't know, would you say top of his game during this? I mean, this put him to the top of the game if he wasn't already there. But I didn't list out all his movies because I didn't want to spend a half an hour just listing his movies, because he doesn't have 100 and so movies. But the ones he does, like, he reminds me of, you ever seen the skit on Saturday Night Live with Christopher Walken with the cowbell?
Yeah.
And he comes out and he's like, guys, I'm just like you. I put my pants on one leg at a time. You know, he's like, but when I put my pants on, I make gold records.
Yeah.
And that's what Tom Cruise does. When he makes movies, like, he makes hits.
I put my pants on just like the rest of you, one leg at a time. Except once my pants are on, I make gold records.
Like, there's very few flops in his career. You know, I'd say at least maybe before this when he was younger, maybe not so much, but very few going forward from this movie on that you weren't like, oh, like, even the Mission Impossibles. I mean, all the lawyer movies that he would do, like, forget about it. Like, he's just.
Wait, hold on. He did The Firm. Are there other ones I'm missing?
Good Men, The Firm.
Oh, okay. That's fair. Yeah.
I feel like there was another one on there, but like I said, I didn't list him out because I would spend all day talking about Tom. We'll do a Tom Cruise episode and we'll dive into his career, I guess. Yeah. But
he's amazing, though. I mean, if you think of a movie star, he probably has got to be the first person you think of, right? Just as far as like having that cool, handsome, action, willing to, like, all the guys want to be him, all the ladies want to be with him, like that kind of thing. Like,
I wouldn't put him above like a Brad Pitt as far as like.
He's up there too, yeah. He's,
you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Yeah, but at the time, like, he. as far as a movie star goes, yeah, he's all in on his movies. And I think that shows, that proof is in the pudding.
And he feels more like single-minded of like, he's always the star. He's always like right on the poster. Like Brad Pitt is usually that way, but like he's kind of willing to take some weird one-off roles and like kind of be in the background or ugly himself up a bit. Like you don't usually see Tom Cruise doing that, which I'm not saying either one is better. They're both huge movie
stars. Yeah, I wasn't trying to make a comparison, but you know what I mean?
When Top Gun came out, probably what Tom Cruise was, even at that point, still mainly known for was Risky Business.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, most people knew him from that. And I think Top Gun is probably, like y'all were saying, what really elevated him to where he is now, you know, or was the main instrumental in making him the you know, personality that he's known to be now.
So also co-starring Val Kilmer. I'm a huge Val Kilmer fan. Like he had a run of movies that I just really enjoyed him in. So of course he was Iceman in this. But a few gems that you may have missed. I doubt you did. But so he started off with Real Genius. That was in 85. That was before he got this role. I was thinking of that movie. Have you seen Real Genius, of course?
A long time ago.
Yeah. I think if you watched it again now, he kind of reminded me like of a version of like Ryan Reynolds back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because he was just he's a good looking smart ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good comparison.
You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, that's very similar to, I mean, Reynolds kind of took that and did it better as we see Deadpool and everything else that he's in, right? But, you know, so Real Genius, he was in Willow, The Doors, which is one of my favorite movies. Like, he did fantastic in that, sang his own songs in that movie, which was great. Iconic role in Tombstone as Doc Holliday, which is great.
Forgive me if I don't shake hands.
I actually liked him in Batman Forever, and I'm not afraid to admit that.
You know what? I am going to stand with you, Mark, because I knew this would come up, and that movie is not put at the top of the Batman pantheon, and I think even we won't quite put it up at the top with Dark Knight and other things out there. But yeah, I think, at least for me, like, that was like middle school or so when that came out. So, like, I'd seen the original Batman, Batman 2, but, like, I don't know. That was good for me. Jim Carrey is the Riddler. I know a lot of people hate that. I was down with it. Val Kilmer is Batman. He worked, like, following up Michael Keaton. Like, I think overall, people are negative on it, but I like it. I'm with it.
You're not a Batman guy, are you, Scott?
I've seen some of the movies, yeah. I haven't seen every one of them, but no.
You'll be okay if you don't, trust me. Yeah.
You're not going to throw me out. I don't get the ejection seat for that.
I recommend the Christopher Nolan series, and then if you haven't seen the Robert Pattinson version, it's more of a detective movie, so it's really good. It's not he's Batman, yes, but he's not...
He's not a
vampire, but he's a Batman. He's a detective, and like if you fans of the comic book, and I don't want to like spin into this, but he's the world's greatest detective. Well, this actually shows a lot of that. Like he's solving mysteries. He just happens to be dressed as a bat, right? So cool. There you go. Also, Heat. Val Kilmer was in Heat, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And then what you might have missed too. Have you seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang? So that was in 2005. Him and Robert Downey Jr.
That's right.
Yeah. Really good movie. Again, it's like a detective noir type movie.
I don't know why I haven't seen that. I need to.
You really should. Like, it's a fun movie to watch. You know, it's funny, but it's got some action. It's pretty good. And then, of course, he shows up again in Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah,
you know,
that was really
throat cancer or whatnot going
on. Yeah, I love the way they handled that, given everything that had gone on. But
they did. Yeah,
yeah, we'll get to that.
What I didn't know, I found this out. They did a remake of Knight Rider back in 2008 and 2009, and Val Kilmer was the voice of Kit.
Oh yeah,
really? Okay,
yeah. I never heard it, but I looked it up. And I'm like, really? Like, I'm gonna check that out.
Who was the David Hasselhoff role?
I don't care.
Correct answer.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, so yeah, that's Val Kilmer for you. And this, my opinion, the worst cast member of this is Kelly McGillis as Charlie. Just horrible, horrible casting all around.
Oh my god!
I'll let you speak to Kelly McGillis.
She's fine. What's wrong with her? She's really good. I don't know.
I'm going to get into that. We'll get into what's wrong with her. I got a list.
Now's the time. Let's hear it.
Well, she only got this role because she was in Witness with Harrison Ford, which I don't think I've seen that, but there it is. In 1994, she was on the set, you know, Tom Hanks' bachelor party?
Okay.
She got fired from that because she wasn't sexy enough.
Oh, man. So, I've gotten fired a few times for not being sexy enough.
Well,
also,
you know. Not like Pete, though. Pete has never been fired for that.
No, never will be.
I'll get into Kelly McGillis a little bit after. There's some scenes in here and some questionable script choices, right?
Can't wait.
So any thoughts on Kelly McGillis at this for you, Scott?
No, not really. The other thing, again, you're asking about my, you know, personal connection to the movie. And I have a story, which I mentioned earlier, about not necessarily my personal connection, but my wife's personal connection to this movie and her family, which we can talk about a little bit later if you want. But so the funny thing is, I mentioned that I was interested in, you know, going into the in the military, being a pilot, which didn't happen, as we talked about on Casual Nonsense, which if you all have not checked out, Mark's other podcast, Casual Nonsense, check it out. I tell on one of the episodes my whole crazy story about my connection with aviation, which we don't get into now. But one of the things that I did get to do as a skydiver was, you know, the military really does hire experts, like somebody who, you know, like in Top Gun, Charlie had a PhD in astrophysics or something like that. And the military will hire civilian experts to help train, you know, military personnel. And that's actually something I got to do as a skydiving instructor. Mm-hmm. I got to be Charlie, basically, except I don't have the flowing blonde hair and I didn't sleep with Tom Cruise, but that was
missed opportunity, Scott.
That's when I see Charlie. Well, you know, that's a matter of opinion. But yeah, when I see Charlie, that was kind of like the funny connection I was thinking of as preparing to do this podcast. Like, oh yeah, like which character in the movie would I be? Well, that's kind of what I got to do.
Nice. Maybe that should be your code name. Your call sign is now Charlie.
I was going to ask later, like when we do our kind of fun facts and stuff, if you guys, what your call sign would be, if we got to, but maybe we'll think about it. We'll get to it.
You got Anthony Edwards playing Goose in this. Love Anthony Edwards. I mean, this guy's great in a lot of things. Of course, you probably remember him from Revenge of the Nerds 1 and 2, right?
That's one of the top of my list. I know most people know him ER, and I don't think I've ever watched a single second of ER, which really is kind of crazy because it was the biggest thing going for a while. So, yeah, for me, it's Top Gun, Revenge of the Nerds, kind of distant second compared to this, but
okay,
that's my main things with him.
All right. He's been in other movies too, but yeah. You know, for me, these are the big ones.
I was remembering a funny, I used to watch ER. He was really good in that show, but I remember one scene that was really funny because this was later in life, right? Like you could see him in ER and not even maybe remember that he was Goose because he looked very different in that show. Right?
Yeah.
But there was one scene in ER where he was saying, like, I forget even what the whole setup of the scene was about, but there's one point where he says, so that's going to go through him like poop through a goose, which is like a
funny saying, right? Callback,
and just
yeah.
The way he said it, he like paused for a second. It's going to go through him like poop through a goose.
Nice.
And you could tell it was like an intentional callback to Top Gun when he said it.
I love when shows do that, man. That's fantastic. You know, little tidbits that you pick up on, you know. Did you ever watch, have you watched the second season of Reacher? You guys watch Reacher?
Yeah, I'm all caught up on that now. Just watched it recently.
So the villain in Reacher is it Robert Patrick, who's in Terminator 2?
Yes.
So there's a scene in there where the girl's like, oh, the alias is Sarah Connor. He's like, well, who the fuck is that?
Yep.
You know, and it's like, oh, that was so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess they didn't really plan that. It was just something they threw it out there. You know, it's kind of, the way they described it was good. I was looking it up afterwards.
Awesome.
I'm like, but I love when they put those tie-ins, you know, and they do something similar with the same guy, and I think it's Wayne's World or something.
It's cool because, I mean, we get kind of tied in. Like, yes, you're playing a role, but, like, as viewers, like, we kind of get involved with these actors, like, their whole filmography and all their different roles they've had. So it's kind of cool, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense, like, just on a literal level, like, be like, oh, yeah, it makes me think of that role he was famous for and, like, this famous line or whatever he had. Like, I always like when they do things like that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Everyone knows Matthew McConaughey, but you don't know him like we do here on the Mastering McConaughey podcast. You probably know McConaughey from his stint doing rom-coms, but did you know that he played Gary Oldman's twin brother in a movie where they both have dwarfism? Or that he played opposite Al Pacino in a sports betting thriller that has 22% on Rotten Tomatoes? Or that he starred in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie? Here at the Mastering McConaughey podcast, we go through McConaughey's filmography while also exploring his philosophy. And we talk about his sweet abs a little, too. Check us out on Instagram and TikTok at MasteringMPod and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Tom Skerritt plays Viper in this. He's one of the main instructors of the Top Gun school. I mean, this dude's been in a ton of movies all the way back to the 60s. Like, I skim through him. Like, you see him and stuff, but...
Yeah, nothing. He's one of those guys. He's never the top guy in it, but he's always a good, like, member of the cast. He's in Alien. He's in Contact. He's in... you see the Bruce Willis movie Tears of the Sun. It's been a while. I don't specifically remember from that, but I saw that on his filmography. So yeah, he's always a reliable.
And he pulls off the mustache really well. He pulls off the mustache well. Not as good as Tom Selleck or Scott sitting there next to us, but but he definitely pulls it off good for this, right? Tim Robbins plays Merlin in this. So we did Tim Robbins and briefly. Shawshank. So yeah, very briefly, right? So I didn't want to get in all his items. If you're curious more how our thoughts on Tim Robbins, check out episode 1 of the Double Take podcast.
Which is a really good episode. Yeah. If you have any interest in that movie, Shawshank Redemption, then yeah, I recommend that to any listeners.
Nice. Sure. We also recommend it, right, Mark?
Yeah, of course. Hence my shameless plugging as we continue. So fun fact about Tim Robbins, he was kicked off his high school hockey team for fighting. Which is weird because he seems like such a passive guy, you know, but
also you need a guy like that. Like what are they thinking?
You need a goon.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get Meg Ryan plays the wife of Goose.
Mrs. Goose.
Mrs. Goose. She has a name on the show. It's Carol. I don't know if you knew that.
But yeah, that's right. She appears in the credits as Carol.
So she's in there. So she's been in a bunch of things. I mean, a lot of rom-coms. Like that was kind of her claim to fame, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, Prelude to a Kiss,
You've Got a Mail,
When a Man Loves a Woman. Like, there's just the whole string from like the 90s with that was her kind of typecast.
It's all your favorite movies, right? You could.
They're coming up. They're coming up on the Double Take. You know, so she turned down the role in Pretty Woman as the star in Pretty Woman, so she would have been the hooker there. So she turned that down in 1990. Like that was right after when Harry Met Sally. She was offered the lead in Silence of the Lambs as well.
Oh, wow. Man. And these are always fascinating to me to hear, like, these casting what-ifs. Like
that's two movies right there that would have changed. I don't think she would have done as good in either of those movies, to be honest. But if she did, either changes the movie or it changes her career.
I don't think I can picture in Pretty Woman. I think they got it right ending up with Julie Roberts in that one. But
I can't picture in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
You know?
She ever played, like, a more, like a thriller, like a more serious, like, dangerous kind of role?
Not that I noticed.
That would be interesting to see because she is so good in comedies and she's such an amazing actor. But it's sometimes you see somebody in a role that you wouldn't expect them to be in. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but you see somebody in a role and you're thinking, oh, I would never expect that person to be in that kind of role or that kind of movie. And they do really well.
Yeah.
It's like their hidden talent, right? Their hidden superpower.
And then it like changes that. Like we talked about Keanu, like he was Bill and Ted. And then he did Point Break and he did Speed and all of a sudden now he's like one of the biggest action stars. So yeah, who knows? Maybe Meg Ryan would have gotten in that and she would have become like.
I feel like if she wanted to be in a role like Silence of the Lambs, then her next 10 years wouldn't have been all rom coms.
Oh yeah, would have had to be different.
I wonder if she knew that she couldn't pull that off. I don't know. But she did audition for the role of Charlie. That would have changed my approach on the Charlie character in general. I think that's neither here nor there. And then we get to, questionably, my favorite character is James Tolkien. He was Stinger, captain or the admiral, whatever he is, on the aircraft carrier from the opening scene and the closing scene as well.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
I love this actor. Like, you know him better probably from Back to the Future. Slacker. but everything he's in is awesome. You know, he showed up in War Games, Masters of the Universe. I was on TV recently. Yeah. He was in that. I just love his... he's always been bald for some reason.
Yeah, like the look is what does it.
Yeah, the look does it. And just the way he delivers his lines, like he's just... Like
the gruff demeanor.
Yeah. I mean...
He's good at yelling at people. That's his superpower.
Very specific talent.
Such a talent at yelling at people, yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. So, all right, so let's get into this movie here. I know, Terrence, you gave us a breakdown of the movie. We'll blow through some of the scenes here because there's a lot of really cool scenes. The table setting is awesome. So in my opinion, this is one of the better opening scenes in movie history, like with the music kicking in and they're showing like the aircraft carrier and the steam coming off the deck.
Yeah.
It was awesome for me. Like I'm even watching it now. Like I'm just like, man, like that's good. Like I was into that. And just the way the music just kicks in. And then when the planes start taking off, it changes the music to the Kenny Loggins.
Yeah, you start out with just the theme that and that just sets the mood. And then once you get into the danger zone, it really it's like, all right, action time.
There's like in the opening, it's got like, I don't know if it's bells or something, but it's just the right amount of if you haven't seen this movie, one, foolish, but two, at least go watch the beginning and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's awesome.
Scott, what's your perspective on it, like from that aviation background? Like that seems like it's not your typical movie scene because, like, you don't often see, like, just kind of the grunt work and the behind the scenes of what goes into making these, like, they're the stars of the movie, but also, like, they're the stars of the whole, of Top Gun school and all of that. But you get to see all these guys on the aircraft carrier deck and with the ropes and doing all these different things. Like, that was cool to me as someone that wouldn't even understand what they're possibly doing. How was it for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm definitely not an expert in aircraft carriers and all that stuff.
Right.
But it is like, you know, the one thing about an aircraft carrier deck is one of the most dangerous places on the planet. There's just so many things that can go wrong with those guys standing there. They have to know exactly where to be and not to be at every moment. It's a beehive, right? It's an ant's nest. There's so much coordinated activity going on. And what they're doing is pretty wild, right? When you think about it, they're taking these... They're taking a plane, shoving it off the front of the aircraft carriers, and you know, getting it. You're going from zero to, I don't know how fast. Well, it depends on the plane, but how fast they're going by the end time they hit the end of that catapult. Fast enough to keep flying. So, yeah. You know, 150 miles an hour.
If it was a DeLorean, it'd be 88.
Right. And they got to go faster than that. They got to get faster than that by the time they hit.
Definitely not going to cut
it. And just all the mechanics of how that works. But it's a really there's so much energy and so much action happening and coordination, everybody in their role, everybody doing exactly the right thing, exactly the right time. And they're trying to get those planes off the deck as fast as they can, you know, in certain times when they need to. And then it all switches around to recovery, to landing the planes, right, which is a whole other art form. So it is just – it's interesting that they recognize that that's like an ideal place to shoot exactly that kind of scene. The way they shot it, you know, like showing up intense and I think that's why that scene plays so well, because it is really like you're standing there on the deck just as an observer watching all that action happening,
yeah.
Right, with the music that they picked to go with it. It's an example of picking the place to shoot that scene, shooting it really well, putting it to the right music, and it just comes together.
As a fun fact, I had the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier as a kid,
mm-hmm.
So that was fun.
So you're the expert in aircraft carriers.
Yeah, you should be.
Well, like, the G.I. Joe one anyway. It had the little raise, like the little platform that raised the plane up.
And... Scott, he said had, but when I walked in here, he was playing with it. He shoved it under the desk.
Oh, well, moving on.
Anybody,
I wish I did.
Anybody who gets rid of that like is going to regret it, so of course.
Yeah. Damn it, Dad. Goose in this is the comic relief of the movie, right? At least at the beginning part of it. So I don't know if you caught the beginning. They're making like a fishing reference. You know what I mean? When they're flying,
mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Oh, I'll hook them." He's like, "Oh, I'll clean them and fry them."
Yeah,
you know? It's like little silly things like that. You know, you notice the bogeys in here were not any kind of country. They were just like a random star,
just faceless enemy.
Yeah, that I think was actually the U.S. Navy, because the U.S. Navy made several demands when they agreed to let them shoot at Miramar and on the aircraft carrier. They had several demands. One of them was there was going to be a crash scene on the aircraft carrier that they took out. There was going to be, and they originally just had the Russian star on the tail of the planes. And I think it was the Navy that wanted to put the circle around it. Yeah, let's not inflame tensions. So make it some unknown, country and not.
Yeah, they did that with the new one, too. I know that was a big talking point of like they never specifically said, oh, this is the country or this is the enemy we're fighting. It was just like vague Eastern European.
Yeah, there is
doesn't
only
like
one
democracy
country in the world still operating F-14s, which is Iran. But yeah, you know,
there you go.
Maybe only plane nerds would know that. But yeah, and the interesting thing too, the MiG-29, which is a fictitious plane, which is the plane that they're fighting against in Top Gun, is actually, it's called an F-5. It's a training plane, a trainer, basically, but they use that as the aggressor planes, as the mock enemy plane at the actual Top Gun school. They've used that exact plane as.
Is that what the instructors were flying? Like
that
like,
would be what the in Top Gun. That's what the instructors would be flying,
like Viper
and Jester. You know, in the movie they're flying. I think it's an A-4, which is also used as the aggressor plane, but they would also be flying the F-5s, which in Top Gun was used as the actual enemy planes.
Nice,
cool.
Look at that. See. This is paying off with this guy. He's got the information, you know. So, again, I didn't understand why Goose would have a Polaroid camera on his plane, you know, but, you know, probably not Navy standards, I'm guessing.
Got to be ready for any situation.
And as I'm watching this again, right, and you see, like, you skip forward to Miramar where all they're fighting, right, and you say, okay, this is what a good pilot is like. Get to this opening scene with Cougar, and you're like, well, Cougar kind of sucks. Like, he was the number one guy. Like, I know it's by design, but he didn't show me anything that's like, why was he suddenly number one? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, Maverick became number one after he kind of freaked out, but it was like, they didn't establish enough that, this guy, what made him so good?
I did like when Goose drops a little forward note about Penny Benjamin,
you know,
played later in the you know, in Top Gun 2, right?
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly's character.
There are a lot of things that happen in the movie that if you poke at them too closely, they do kind of fall apart. But they're there for the purpose of the story and the action.
Of course, yeah.
You know, like Wood Cougar, somebody who is that trained. Yeah, he got shaken. He got, you know, spooked by that whole incident in the beginning.
Yeah.
But there's a certain point where, like, the reason why they're so intensely trained is so that when you're in a bad situation, your training just takes over. And you're like, basically, your body and your brain are on autopilot. So, you know, would that real, and I don't know, this is not something I know from expertise, but would a pilot really be in that situation? Would he, would a pilot have reacted that way? Or would he just been like, okay, autopilot kicks in, you land the plane, and then you climb out of the cockpit and puke kind of thing, you know, yeah, is yeah. that like, yeah. you know, so how, so there are certain things like that, that I think if you start poking at them too closely, they're, and other things about like the, you know, like you can go on YouTube and you can find, and this is interesting to do sometimes, you can find actual former naval aviators who will look at things like Top Gun yeah. or video games or other movies and like do an analysis and say like, this is real, this isn't, you know, yeah. and my wife's dad had some interesting things to say about that too, about this
okay.
movie too.
Nice. We'll,
you know, we can get into that sometime if you want.
I like when they do that. I like when the movie's real enough where the experts come in and say, well, this would really happen. It makes it more authentic. And I feel like this gets into everything we were saying about at the beginning with Tom Cruise being here and the different cameras they created. That's the idea. You know what I mean? If you're going to make it too cheesy, this movie's not making $300 million or whatever. It's yeah. not number one if it's a cheesy movie.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That's kind of a tough balance, I think, probably for a writer and director is, you know, you have to take certain liberties to, you right. know, to move the story along. You got to make it a story. You got to, you know, have some dramatic action. But if you go too far and make it too cheesy, then it just, the movie falls apart. Right. So I yeah. imagine that's a really hard thing for a director and writer to do. To walk that line, right?
I think that's going to be – I have to think that's part of the producer. So having someone like Bruckheimer on here, like he brings that swagger to be like, well, we're going to – don't worry about the budget. We're making it this way rather than a studio executive coming down and saying, oh, we got to cut this. So we don't yeah. have – we can't pay for another week on the aircraft carrier. Like you got to wrap it up, you know, and it affects the product. So in this, it looks like they didn't spare any expense. Like
spared no expense.
And that's what you can tell that about a good movie, you know, everything we're saying.
Going back to Cougar real quick, Scott, I wonder, you had mentioned that the military, the U.S. military, wanted a scene cut out where there was a crash on the aircraft character, on the aircraft carrier. I wonder if that was Cougar landing, like, because he was all over the place. Like, as he's flying, if you haven't seen the movie before, you're like, there's no way he's landing this plane. He's going to end up in the water or crashing into the side of the carrier, and somehow he gets it down. But yeah, I wonder if that was maybe the scene.
Possibly. Yeah, maybe that was it. Maybe that was the original plan. Yeah.
Did you say you have been on an aircraft carrier or not?
I've been on the it's the aircraft carrier that's parked in New York Harbor, New York City. You can actually, it's the Intrepid, I think, Air and Space Museum.
Okay.
So yeah, that's, you can actually go on the actual, an actual aircraft carrier and tour it and walk around the flight deck, and they have, it's like a museum basically. They have not all just naval aircraft, but they have aircraft parked there, and that's I'm pretty sure it's the Intrepid Air and Space Museum. Awesome. That's
yeah, I guess what I'm wondering is, so a live aircraft carrier like in combat or whatever, is there no air conditioning on these? Because these guys are always dripping sweat everywhere they go. They're just,
it doesn't
wet.
Seem a concern. Yeah,
you mean like after they're flying, after they're done flying,
just
or?
Everywhere, like every scene when they're on the aircraft carrier, they're just beads of sweat or water dripping down. And I was like, what's going on there? Like, what's happening?
Well, yeah, some of that I think is accurate, because it's like when you're flying a plane like that, a fighter, it's like, you know, you're doing a full body workout the whole time. It's
oh,
not
I imagine,
like, yeah. So like those guys are going to get out of those planes just dripping sweat. Yeah.
Mark is not joining Top Gun school unless he's got AC. He's got a drink holder. He needs the amenities here.
Right. And we're moving off from the Polaroid. We're going digital now. This is what we're doing. Yep. From what I'm in inverted dive. I love the scene with James Tolkien. Like, one of my favorite scenes overall when he's yelling at these guys.
Excuse
like,
me. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just, like I said, always yelling, always awesome. I love him. Any scene with him to me is gold in this movie. We get to Miramar, now they're at Top Gun, which I didn't know Miramar is a real place, by the way. It is a real, I thought they made it up for this movie. It's there. It's official. Confirmed. Right? But you see Val Kilmer, he's always twirling, like he does it in Doc Holliday, too. Like he's got the pen, he does it in Doc Holliday with the coin.
Yeah.
I think he does it in The Saint. I think he's doing something similar in there. So it's just, it's cool that he can
it's
do
his
that.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know if you ever tried flipping a pen like he does. Like, he just brings it back around. It's really hard. You know? But... So they get to Top Gun, right? And the first night when they go to the bar, like all the Navy guys are to the bar, as they're walking in the bar, there's a sign out front that says Animal Night. And I didn't know what that...
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I was like, I had to go back. And I'm like, did I just see that right? And I was like, are people, like, you bringing in animals? Or, like, I didn't know what was going on with that. So, anyways. So I discovered in this too, Goose is the perfect sidekick, you know, in any situation, right? Obviously, he's a good Rio, but, you know, they sing the song, try to pick up the girl.
Yeah.
Whatever they're doing.
You've lost that love and feeling. That's yeah. A great scene.
Have you used that pickup line before? Is that your go-to?
Sang that song before?
Yeah, you and Pete have a routine when you go in somewhere and...
Nah, Pete won't let me be his wingman. Pete operates alone. I can't get in on that.
I love it. Now, for you, Scott, you don't sing songs to pick up your wife or anything?
No, I don't. That's a good question. But no, I think she'd prefer that I don't sing.
Yeah,
there's a,
because you have a list. Sing, that's why she chose to marry you.
Yeah. No, actually, I do. Well, that's a whole other story. This is my superpower, my hidden superpower. I can make up ridiculous lyrics to just about any song, ridiculously silly or ridiculously obscene lyrics to any song. So she does get serenaded by my goofy versions of various songs.
Sounds like we're going to see a YouTube channel from you coming up soon. Let's make that happen.
I'd probably get kicked off of YouTube for that. Yeah.
I like the interaction.
Or you're going to make a whole bunch of money doing it.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
I like the interaction at the end of that scene, though, with Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis. She's like, are you a good pilot? He's like, I can hold my own. She's like, good, then I don't have to worry about you having a career as a singer.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. When they find out she's the instructor, you know, it's an ultimate, like, oh, shit, it's her.
What were you doing there?
Communicating. You know, giving him the bird. You know, the finger.
Yes, I know the finger, Goose.
I'm sorry, I hate it when it does that.
So you mentioned earlier, Scott, and this is one of my questions. So she has a PhD in astrophysics. So one of my nitpicks was, so? Like, why are you instructing? But as you were saying, like, that's actually a real thing. Like, they have civilian instructors in there?
Yeah, the military will hire civilian experts who are – and, you know, it would be more than just having a PhD. Like, you would have to have some area of expertise that the military finds valuable. And they would hire people to come in and do training or advising people in different roles, doing different jobs.
I see.
So that's you know, realistic from that.
Now, when she got up in front of him and she's speaking about the drag and the yaw and all this different stuff, I thought it was believable. Like, I want to know, I feel like now's the time maybe. Let's hear the, is it more the chemistry with Tom Cruise part of it or the, you don't think she's believable as the instructor and the expert in the field? Like,
I'm going to save it for my nitpicks at the end. Because like I said, it's a list and it's going to tie into some other scenes. I don't want to jump too far ahead.
All right, cool.
So we'll get that rolling through. But right away, you get tension from, like, Maverick and Iceman. You know, what I realized in this movie, too, and you guys tell me if you agree or not, Iceman's kind of a weasel in this movie. You know what I mean? Like, at one hand, he's like, oh, he's just cocky. He's doing his thing. Like, he's just kind of a dirtbag all the way around. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing good he does until the very end when he's like, oh, you can be my wingman. The whole time, like we'll get into how Goose dying, like, he's in the way. You know, he's just this cocky, arrogant prick. You know what I mean? Who's just trying to get a rise out of Tom Cruise, like, gets in his face, like, oh, you want some help? You know, figuring who's number one, you know? And it's just like the little things, like, he just keeps pushing his buttons the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I think he probably recognizes Maverick's skill and maybe is a little threatened by it also because he's the top guy. He's like, that's his main competition. But I mean, on the other hand, like, Iceman is following the rules. He's not like we identify with Maverick. We're seeing the story from his perspective for the most part. Like, he's the hero. He doesn't listen to anything. He just plays by his own rules with everything. And it kind of makes Iceman seem like the villain in a lot of ways because he's naturally opposed.
And he is really, like, in terms of the movie, the story, I mean, Iceman really is the antagonist in the movie, right? Like, he's the bad guy. It's not that kind of movie where it's like, you know, the bad guy and the good guy, like, battling
each
other.
Kill each other,
but they're definitely within, you know, the Top Gun school. They are in competition with each other, and I think they probably make Iceman come across as a little bit of a jerk to you know, Maverick, just for that reason, right? To create that tension between them. And, you know, realistically, I mean, they're, you know, I mean, they're, you're going to see situations where you have, like, at in a company, are on a team, right? Playing sports, where you have two people who are kind of, you know, antagonistic. They're on the same team, but they're also in competition with each other and antagonistic. So I think from a, you know, from the storyline, it makes sense that Iceman would be that way. And, you know, I don't think it's super unrealistic that two people in that situation would have that kind of, you know, relationship antagonizing
alpha males,
each other.
Button heads.
Yeah.
Well, my, I guess what made me think of it over the top was more at the end when they're on the aircraft carrier and they're actually going into battle, when they're like, okay, Maverick, you're on, you know, call five or whatever. And he's like, hey, it's not personal. You know, you really think he's right for this? Like, now you're just questioning orders. Like, now you're in there just like, your job is to be the number one and you're questioning the backup. Like, you're questioning this admiral and their choices. It's like, you're not in school anymore. You're not in competition anymore. Now that's it's fair. Like, you know what I mean? And that's when I was like, all right, like I get it. It's for the character.
He did kind of lose it though, Maverick. Like he needed to kind of get back in the saddle and get his mojo
he
back.
He did. Like, and I
that's
get
life
that.
And death out there. You got to be able to trust the guy that's with you.
I don't know. Like I said, it's just those little scenes that I was noticing in here where he was just, you know, he tried to be a good guy after Goose died, and then I was like, ah, whatever.
Yeah, his line to Maverick, to the effect of like, I like Goose. I'm sorry that happened.
Everybody liked him.
Yeah. And it was not really a whole lot of like comforting words from Maverick in that moment. He just left. So it was just
like a shitty
apology,
we
like Goose.
Right?
Like it was like the left unsaid part was like, I kind of wish it was you instead.
Yeah.
I saw that scene as like, this is not something that Iceman does normally. This is not his normal way of communicating. He's not comfortable doing this, so he's like doing the best he can,
making an effort
as a jerk. He's doing the best he can to try to say something nice.
That's fair.
You ever like someone to apologize to you and they're like, I'm sorry that you're mad of what I said?
Like, sorry,
that's
you
not
feel
an apology
mad.
Yeah, like,
my mom told me to say I'm sorry.
right like, come on. You know, they get into the volleyball game, you know, good camera angles, because what's Tom Cruise like, 5'7", 5'8"? He's not spiking a volleyball.
No.
Like, no way, man. Like, he's athletic enough to, like, run. You see him running, and he's got a lot of running scenes in movies. But I wouldn't call him an athlete. Like, so when I watched Top Gun, I rewatched it for this. I kept that party going. I rolled into Top Gun 2. And
there's
a scene where they're playing football on the beach.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't throw a football good either.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, when you watch, like, Keanu Reeves, like, he's a quarterback. You know, Tom Cruise is throwing it, like a 5-year-old trying to throw something, you know, like
he's very unrefined. He's got the speed. He can run. He can fight. But like, as far as all the technical aspects of any kind of sport, like he hasn't been coached very well.
Like, and what I will say though is, I played volleyball in high school. So like, there's, I don't want to say there's a technical way to play volleyball. It's not that, you know, I'm not trying to like sound like an elitist, right? But the volleyball scenes were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, there wasn't. You know, it wasn't like a backyard volleyball game. Like,
I don't know what I do here now. We've got the aviation expert. We got the volleyball expert.
No,
I don't
not
know.
An expert.
The sports writer?
Yeah, I don't know how that applies.
You're here
to
for
this.
The vocabulary words.
There we go.
Yeah, you can correct our grammar.
I haven't pronounced anyone's name wrong yet today, so we got to.
You did say Bruckenheimer before. I wasn't going to bring it up.
Look who knows so much, huh?
What's interesting about you were just saying, like bringing that up about Tom Cruise being his height. I remember reading something about Top Gun that Kelly McGillis, did I say her name right?
Yeah, Kelly McGillis.
I just had a brain moment like, oh my gosh, did I forget her name? So apparently she performed barefoot in some of those scenes with him just because of his height. But that brings up a really interesting thing, because you would think somebody playing the kind of roles he plays, right? The macho, you know, maverick, that it maybe, I wonder if it was hard for him as a guy who's not super tall to like win those kind of roles and to create the kind of acting career he has. Like, what kind of presence does he have to have, or personality or charisma or just acting talent?
Yeah, he definitely defies
that. He's not
odds.
Like a 6'2" guy coming in there being like, hey, I'm going to be the leading man. It's an interesting part of it. It's like just an interesting thing to think about with him as an actor.
Well, we mentioned Reacher before, and the Reacher, the TV show, the guy that plays him is a monster of a man.
Yeah.
And there was, I think, two Jack Reacher movies that Tom Cruise played him. And, like, it's a series of, like, 20-plus books. And in the books, I know it says, like, this is a huge, hulking beast of a man. And now Tom Cruise played him. I think that – I actually didn't see those movies, because part of it was, like, I knew – I had read one of the books. I knew about it. And it was, like, Tom Cruise doesn't – I love Tom Cruise, but he doesn't make any sense as that kind of role.
I'll say that those two Reacher movies he was in were actually pretty good movies, like, in general. As a fan of Reacher, the TV show is better. Because of that, the guy, I think it's Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Fantastic Reacher, by the way. Tom Cruise plays it well because he has good fight scenes. He's a detective in this, right? So he plays a good detective in that level. So, like, they're good movies. But in Top Gun 2, there's a couple scenes where he's standing next to Miles Teller. And Miles Teller is so much taller than him. And there's one scene, they try to angle it so you can't tell. But there's one scene I noticed where it's pretty significant, where I think maybe they didn't edit that correctly. Because it looks like they try not to show him looking up, but, like, they kind of panned out from it. And you see it's a good 3 to 4 inches, like, tall. Jeez. Like, it's it's pretty extravagant. I don't know how tall Miles Teller is. I think he's like 6'1", maybe.
Not super tall. But
he's not, right, but taller than Mr. Tom Cruise. Sure, like, yeah. I don't know if he's on his tippy toes. I don't know what's going on. but a couple of good scenes. When they get to Top Gun and they're getting acclimated with the volleyball, the tower drive-by, right, like permission to buzz the tower situation. Yeah. Like, the little pranks that he does to be kind of that rebel, if you will. I forget how you described him earlier today, but...
Question, why does that guy always get a fresh mug of coffee every time Tom Cruise is out in a plane? He knows when he does it at the end, I'm like, you didn't learn your lesson the first time? Come on.
Right, you're in a tower, you're not expecting planes to fly by you?
Yeah.
Like, that scares you all of a sudden? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, have you ever been in an air show or anything and heard a sonic boom?
I guess probably not.
That would be the thing, right? The real thing is if they came by and they were like, and they even show it, like the very scene at the end, the last time the guy gets coffee spilled on him, you kind of hear the sonic boom as they're flying by. Like, I remember living in Florida. I used to live in Central Florida, not too far from Kennedy Space Center, back in the space shuttle days. And the space shuttle would come in and land, and depending on which direction it was coming from, like, it would fly right over pretty much the land where I lived. And it's going like way over the speed of sound at a certain point. And so you would hear, like, in the morning, I remember like 7:30 in the morning, I'm not even out of bed yet, and the shuttle was landing, and you'd hear the sonic boom. And it will, like, it will shake you. Yeah, it, like, shakes the pictures on the walls, like a sonic. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, when the space shuttle's landing, it's still, I don't know what altitude it would have been when it was come overhead, but not, like, you know, 100 feet up, or not even like 10,000 feet up. It was much higher than that. And you still hear that sonic boom from miles and miles and miles away. And it'll shake the, you know, it'll shake the pictures off the walls. So yeah, the idea that a fighter plane flying by like 500 feet away from the tower and, you know, going maybe, you know, supersonic or really fast would shake things. Yeah, that's not. That's believable.
Okay.
I thought they did it even better in Top Gun Maverick, where Ed Harris's character, like, he's outside and Tom Cruise flies over his head, and it, like, it, like, raises the roof off of the place.
Yeah.
It was really
and
cool.
And he just stood there, and it was like, it was cool. It was good. You're right. It's a good scene. Terrence, as our in-house rom-com expert.
Oh, God. When did I get that?
Well, you just got it now because
compared to you, I guess, but all right.
Because of your love for Kelly McGillis. Do you think this was a good, like, chemistry, love connection, like, we, like,
it was all right. I mean, obviously it's not the focal point of the movie, but it's like kind of a good plot point, just to, like, if you're talking about the actual, like, love scene or whatever, like, they definitely took their time with that one. It was a little much, I thought, like, like I said, this isn't a rom-com, this is just a small part of the movie, so
right.
they took it to the danger zone.
They definitely did. Yeah. All right, so we'll blow through some of the rest of this. Like, you know, Goose dies, which is obviously tragic. Leading up to this, I know we talked about some really cool air scenes, like when...
poor Goose just got glossed
up. We're going to glaze over a little bit because we'll circle back, I think. But, you know, just some cool air scenes, I think, which make this movie good. You know, when Viper's in the air and he's flying through, like, they're just, you know, every combat training when they're in Top Gun, I thought was, you know, we're talking about the camera angles and everything else, like, it was just well done. It was well done, especially for 86. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was fantastic. Because there's no CGI at this point. This is just all...
I love, like, the scene where he's going, or Jester's going after him to begin with, the instructor, and then he kind of turns the tables. He does that move where he hits the brakes and pulls up and gets behind him, and that's what he ends up getting in trouble for. They go below the hard deck and everything, which I thought was... Maybe we could talk about that. That was like... He had him. Like, I was
a Weasley move by Jester.
Yeah, I was angry on Maverick's behalf for that, because, like, he had him. It's like, oh, he's just trying to get out of it, and goes below the hard deck. It's like, you lost, bud. Like, just because you're the teacher doesn't mean, that was a pretty cool, like, one of my favorite scenes as far as not only the flying and the cinematography, photography of that whole scene, the way they portrayed it, but also, like, just kind of goes to show you, like, how good Maverick is. Like, he turned the tables on the instructor and, like, pulled off a movie hadn't seen before. Like, you you really need to believe that Maverick is like this wunderkind pilot, and yeah. I think that really established that.
Well, Viper says it at one point. He's like, damn, this kid's good. You know, so it's pretty good there.
Or even in that scene after they get done, you know, Reman, Maverick, and Goose, after Viper gets done reading them the riot act and they leave the room, he says to Jester, like, well, he got you, didn't he?
Yeah. Like, I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he got me.
Yeah, so they respect him as a pilot, of course. They just, he's not disciplined enough to do, you know, everything you were saying at the beginning is like, you're just trained so much. You know, he's not at that level. He's too cocky and too...
Yeah, he comes across as like, I'm thinking about this now as we're talking about it, it's really impulsive. Like, when he is focusing on his job as a pilot, he's excellent, you know, and not just like, he's trained, he's disciplined, he knows how to fly the aircraft, he's an expert, but he also has that, you know, people say, I think it's Charlie says at one point, there's some real genius in your flying.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you never know when he's going to go off the rails and buzz the tower or like do something unpredictable. And that comes across as the problem that people have with him is when he's doing his job, he's good, but you never know when he's going to just head off in his own direction.
Well, you don't have time to think up there. You think you die.
Yeah. No, that's one of the best lines. But it
makes
me
wonder. The problem is when he starts thinking, then he does yeah. like, hey, let's go buzz a tower. He's better off when he's not thinking.
I wonder though, like the military is so much about like discipline and being regimented. Would that have been overlooked? Like how many times he lapsed with his behavior and not following orders and stuff like that. Like obviously he's just incredibly talented. Like would that be enough to have them overlook that and like he like
well,
this
yeah.
the best of the best.
Well, they do it in Top Gun 2. They talk about it.
So he takes it even farther with that. Yeah, he's pushing like, a Mach 10 or whatever.
You'd be a 2-star admiral right now if you didn't have all this hot dog shit.
You should be at least a 2-star admiral by now, if not a senator. Yet here you are, captain. Why is that?
It's one of life's mysteries, sir.
Well, apparently one of the there's a YouTube video or a blog or something out there written by somebody who was actually a Rio, actually, flew in the Navy, saying that basically, yeah, like buzzing a tower like that, he would have lost his flight status.
Right.
Immediately
for
that. So, yeah, there's a little bit of artistic liberty taken there with how much Maverick gets away with.
But it's fun for the movie.
Yeah, it's good for the movie. That's why.
Guy spills his coffee. So right. Oh, so that guy, you got me.
You rascal Maverick.
I'll get you next time, buddy.
You got to be careful about the impression that you get from watching movies like this. It is like flying those planes. It's a hard job. It's really demanding. Those guys have to be super disciplined. Like I said, they're athletes and scholars. They spend hours and hours and hours studying to be able to fly those planes. Like you have to know, you have to be an expert in aerodynamics, like practically an aeronautical engineer yourself. Some of those guys do have degrees in aeronautical engineering. You have to know all the systems. You have to know how the airplane, like all that stuff you said Charlie was talking about in the first scene with her where she's giving that lecture. Like you got to know all that stuff like the back of your hand and know it intuitively to be able to fly those planes.
Yeah.
So the guys who do that work are very, you know, they're super aggressive and cocky, but they're also super disciplined. Like there's no room in what they're doing for not much room anyway for just kind of going off and doing your own
thing. It's interesting to think about because we talked about like the uptick in recruitment, enrollment and everything. I'll bet the reason for that was, I want to be just a badass like Maverick.
Right.
It wasn't like I want to be studied and regimented and everything. Yeah. It's like, I want to pull off cool shit in the air in my plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In reality, it's like, you want to go to flight school? Okay. What was your grade in calculus?
Yeah. There was like, probably a lot of guys got to the first stage there and it was like, this is not for me. This is not what I thought it was.
I want to kind of get to the categories if we can. I think other stuff here. Anything else at the end of the movie that you wanted to reference? I mean, we've seen it, but we love the ending. We love the Buzz the Tower scene again. Maverick gets his mojo back. What I noticed when he got it is they tried to get him up flying after Goose died. He was on his bike on the runway again, and he's watching the planes overhead. And then he kind of had that switch flip, like, okay, I'm ready to fly again. But then, of course, when he's in the plane, he still kind of disengages. And I'm not sure how they know they disengage. Maybe that's an air question. I don't know. But like, Maverick's disengaging. Like, he's 20 feet away from where he was a second ago. Like, does that mean he's disengaging? I don't know.
Yeah.
So it must have been, like, turn off his weapons or something. I'm not really sure how they know that, but.
I do like the scene, though, like the end where basically him and Iceman come together. And even at the beginning, like he does kind of disengage. Like they're worried. They're like, he doesn't have it anymore. Like he bailed on us. But then like he gets it back. His Rio is yelling at him like, what's the matter with you? Come on. You had the shot. You got to do it. He bails out Iceman a couple times. Iceman bails out him. Like they're working together. Finally, the two most talented guys are putting those talents to good use, yeah, and they're on the same team.
Everything comes together when it needed to.
Yeah, so the MiG is trailing Iceman. He circles behind. He takes him out. Then one is behind Maverick. Iceman takes him out. Just a really satisfying ending and culmination of their whole relationship.
And they throw back to that in Top Gun 2, because Tom Cruise takes down three in that dogfight, and he takes down two more in Top Gun 2. Like, and in Top Gun 2, Hangman has like one kill or something like that. He was the only active pilot with a kill. And he's like, oh, I got my second kill. And he's like, well, he's got five. That makes him a...
I think five is to become an ace.
An ace. That's what it was. And she goes, that makes him an ace, you know, or something. So it was kind of cool how they... Everything continued. That's what's so good about Top Gun 2. Yeah, great, great scenes, as we say. Let's get into categories, if we will. Any unanswered questions in here that kind of they skipped over?
I didn't have a lot. I like how Top Gun Maverick, they had a lot of smaller things like Penny became Jennifer Connelly's character, and they didn't just make it wasn't a cash grab kind of movie. Like, they really honored the original. They honored Goose. Like, even just the casting, like, to have Miles Teller and Glenn Powell was like kind of the perfect, obviously not related to Iceman, but like just the real good looking dick. He's super good at what he does. Like, that was really good casting. See, I didn't have a lot of unanswered questions. Did you have any, Scott? Like,
no, nothing that, like, you know, gaps or holes in the plot that was like, well, you know, that left you wondering. Nothing like that in terms of unanswered questions.
You answered one earlier. I didn't know what a Rio did, actually. So you answered that. So thank you for being the expert there. I didn't know why he threw Goose's dog tags into the ocean.
Yeah,
I didn't
that's true.
I was thinking he'd keep those for keepsake.
Yeah.
You know, he gets off and he's like, oh, throws them away, like... And then I was wondering if maybe they skipped that and they'd show him with the dog tags in Top Gun 2, but they didn't. So they.
Yeah, I think it was just like he was still hanging on to that and it was still affecting him. And so that was him like kind of being free. But yeah, that was a little.
I feel like they should have been given to his wife or his son or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It would have been cool if he kept them and then suddenly like Miles
Teller.
Yeah,
and then Rooster's got him later.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
What you were saying, Terrence, that's what that was meant to symbolize, like him letting go of Goose. But
yeah,
you know,
they might, maybe there was a scene that was deleted of like 15 seconds later, like, crap, what did I do? He's diving into the water. That was dumb.
Can we comb the ocean? I'm going to need those back. Different fan theory is that Goose's death is actually on Iceman's fault because he's the one who was in the way. Like, again, that's his cockiness. He wouldn't move. And then when he did, it caused that jet wash. That
yeah, and Maverick did get cleared, like in that court of inquiry or whatever they called it, like of any wrongdoing. So yeah, it was just one of those tough situations where, like, I don't know who gets the blame. But can we talk a little bit about Goose's death? Like, this is going to be the wrong word to
seems like it means a lot to you. So yes, we can.
I do. I love Goose. He's my favorite character. But I don't know. It's just kind of unsatisfying. Like not that obviously you don't want him to just go down in a hail of bullets or something, but just that it took place in training, it's because of the ejector thing, and the thing didn't fully pop off, and he hit his head. He was dead before he hit the water. Like, I don't know, even just watching it again, I was like, man, it just leaves you feeling cold. Like, that's rough.
I'll tell you, though, even though I know it's coming, it gets me every time.
Yeah.
Like, watching it again, I was like I'm feeling sad. You like Goose as a character, and you're like, oh, and the music behind it was perfect.
Yeah, and he's they're in the parachutes floating down, and you can just see, like, his body is lifeless. It's already over.
Even when the helicopter picks him up, he's just like a rag doll.
Yeah, he's got the blood all over his head, and I just hate that scene so much. I know it kind of drives the movie forward and everything, but God, it gets me every time.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I remember from seeing the movie the first time in the movies is because I didn't really know anything about, like, the plot or anything. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. I was really shocked when Goose died. Like, I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, they're playing him up like it's the two of them. It's going to be their story.
Yeah, it was a big impact for somebody who's seen the movie for the first time and doesn't know that's going to happen. Like you said, it still gets you every time. Yeah.
Every time.
And that's actually very realistic because, I mean, first of all, flying those planes is really dangerous. There are a lot of pilots who die in training, you know, just from, I mean, that's real thing. Ejecting is bad. Ejecting is better than crashing, but not a whole lot. Like, a lot of pilots who eject never fly again because of the injuries they get from ejecting.
Really?
You break your back. You can, I mean, there are all kinds of things that happen. It's violent. I mean, that is, first of all, you're flying in an airplane going however fast. There's literally a rocket that shoots you out of the plane. And then you're, you know, the parachute opening, the parachute is designed to open and not hurt you when it opens, but just the whole process of ejecting, especially getting shot out of that airplane. It's like you're getting shot out of the airplane with a gun, basically. And hitting the canopy is potentially a danger. Yeah, that potentially is. Like, some of the ejection seats, if you were to, like, walk around an aviation museum or something and look at the planes, they actually have bars on the top of the seat that are meant to break the canopy if it doesn't actually get clear.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The canopy. So that's all of that part was, you know, potentially realistic about, a death in training and about the way it happened.
They did some of the behind the scenes stuff was them practicing that. Like they had to be, because they talked about when you hit the water, they showed them in this tank and they had to, the G-forces, and then they had to blindfold them and they dumped them in the water and they had to get out. You know, there was a lot of training that went into this that, again, you don't see when you watch the movie, you wouldn't think they would go through that.
It's like, are you talking about the actors went through?
The actors went through. Yeah. They showed them. They had all this behind the scenes stuff. There was all of them are sitting in this tank. They had G-forces going on and they have them trying to do these activities before they forgot what they were doing. They actually show Tom Cruise and Anthony Edwards playing patty cake while they're getting G-force to see if they could stay focused.
Oh, wow. Oh, you know what that might be? Well, it could be G-forces, but what that might be is the altitude chamber. And this that what you're describing.
You know what? You're right. See?
Yeah.
This is why we got this guy here.
This is all real training that pilots have to go through. You know, how do you survive an ejection? What happens when you hit the water? How do you get out of your seat and get out of your plane if you hit the water? But they also put you in an altitude chamber where they'll take you up to whatever, 20,000 feet, where you're going to pass out, you know, from the oxygen. And basically, it's on the ground. You're on the ground, but you're in a chamber they pump the air out of to simulate being at high altitude and low oxygen. And then you take you're wearing the mask, just like you see in the movie, and you take your mask off, and then you get to see how, because everybody responds differently to that. Everybody responds differently to a loss of oxygen or lack of oxygen.
Okay.
So the pilots get to see how they personally react, and they have them do stuff like play patty cake or, you know, shuffle a deck of cards.
Yeah.
And you can watch real videos. I'm sure they're on YouTube. Real videos of that, of people going through that and that training. And it's wild how you, one minute you're fine, and then all of a sudden you're just.
It was very interesting. It was interesting to see like what they went through. But it makes you respect every actor that's out there because you're not just showing up reading your lines. You're not doing a play.
Yeah.
You know, like no disrespect to those doing plays, but whatever. You're not in a plane, so whatever. You know,
that part played a role in Top Gun Maverick too, where like they're climbing, like they're reaching whatever altitude, whatever G's, like about passing out, and if you pass out, like it's over. Like he almost does at the final part.
Like the one guy passed out, but then Tom Cruise didn't. Yeah.
Well, that's one part of like talking about how physical it is to fly those planes. So they're wearing G suits, which basically like pump. It's a suit you wear under your flight suit that basically compresses different parts of your body to squeeze blood back up out of your legs into your brain. But they're also doing what's called a crunch, which is basically like if you sit here right now and tense up all your muscles, like that's what they have to do while they're flying. They train to do that because it helps pump the blood out of their body back up into their brain. Because that's what when you talk about high G's, that's what happens basically is you can black out because the blood gets pulled out of your brain down into your body. So you've got to do physical things to actually prevent that from happening. So while they're flying, trying to shoot other people, they're also doing like these crunch exercises to keep from passing out.
Okay.
Mark, if you see me in future episodes just flexing over here,
that's why we're getting the blood to your brain. That's going to be an exercise every day now we're going to do, every show we do. So what I was looking at too is the all the guys in the hangar you were saying on the flight deck when there's all kind of chaos going on there. So they call them hangar rats, I guess, all the guys like this, the green and the orange and the yellow. So I guess, and you tell me if you know this is true or not, but the actual guys that work there, they call them Skittles.
Taste the rainbow.
Because you see them with the green suits and the orange, and they're directing traffic. They all have their own roles, but I just thought that was a cool little nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah, the colored vests they wear actually show what job they do. Yeah. So like the guys who are the shooters who actually are operating catapults to launch different colors, Skittles, like you said, designates what that person's supposed to be doing on the deck.
Organized chaos.
Yeah.
So we'll have to get colored vests for when we sit here. I was trying to think how many movies Tom Cruise was in where he lived in the shadow of his father, right? This was one, A Few Good Men. And I was looking through his list, and I don't know. I'm wondering if maybe I just forget on some of those. I was thinking that maybe there was in Days of Thunder, but I don't think he mentions his father in Days of Thunder. I started putting the list, and I'm like, well, I never went back to add to it. So we'll go with the two, unless you guys can think of another one where he's Taps. Have you seen Taps? That was one of his first movies.
Yeah.
I think they all had father issues in that movie. Who peaked in this movie? I mean, Tom Cruise, is this what you think of when you think of Tom Cruise? I mean, there's a lot to choose from for him.
Really is. I don't know. Number one. I feel like he's been in so many Mission Impossibles by now that's kind
of. But what do you think of when you think of Tom Cruise? What's the first movie that you think of? Would it be Top
Gun? I think a lot of people would think of Top. People who aren't like super fans of his might think of Top Gun.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, if you're a little bit older. It is hard to say, though, because he has been in so much. So many of his movies have been big hits. Mm-hmm. I could totally imagine that there would be a real mixed bag of people who are think of Top Gun immediately when they think of him, or maybe think of Mission Impossible.
What about for you? What do you think of?
Just because I'm an airplane nerd, of course, Top Gun.
All right, that's fair.
I think the sequel coming out recently is going to raise those numbers of people that would say Top Gun.
Also, as a character, he's Maverick.
Yeah.
I'm still a fan of A Few Good Men more. Like, that's the nice. One I like him in the most, I think.
I thought you were going to go Tropic Thunder.
No, definitely not.
What do you think, Terrence? What do you think of when you think of
It's movie? Pretty much 50-50. I think maybe having Top Gun Maverick and how I thought that movie was like 10 out of 10, couldn't have been any better. I think that might have edged it over. Mm-hmm. Maybe when the next Mission Impossible comes out, maybe that'll take the lead again. Maybe it's going to be an ongoing race. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Ethan Hunt is his Mission Impossible character. He's a great character, but he's more like he's a better character in Top Gun. Like, he's got more of a personality
more
and
depth.
Everything, I think. Yeah. So I think I will go Top Gun.
Okay.
Close one.
What about Val Kilmer? Is this what you think of with Val Kilmer?
I really love Heat, so I put that up there. But Iceman, again, is more like distinctive, more iconic role, I think. Tombstone is great, but I don't quite put that as high.
I know what you mean. Tombstone's a good call, too. I was going to say The Doors. I watched The Doors a lot.
I thought you were going to go with that, yeah.
Yeah. He did such a good job in The Doors. Like, it's not
a
super...
like all him, too. Like, he's front and center.
He really... the band in that even didn't... They couldn't tell the difference of if it was him or Jim Morrison in some of the scenes.
Yeah, that was really, really good movie. Really well done. And that... What year did that come out? Do you remember?
Yeah, 91.
Yeah. Because I remember that was some of the, like, interesting going to see it was, like, thinking... Or hearing about it and saying, wait, Iceman's going to play Jim Morrison. I'm going to go see this, right? And he did. And then he does such an amazing job in that movie, yeah.
What about anyone else in this movie? Like, is this their peak movie? I mean, like, Meg Ryan, you don't think of... That's not her movie for her,
no.
Right?
No. Honestly, I kind of always forget she's in it until she shows up. Not to disparage her at all, because I like her in this movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely not the first thing you think of for her.
And I know Anthony Edwards, you said this is your jam for him.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to say it's probably for Kelly McGillis as well, right? You haven't seen her do anything else ever?
I couldn't even tell you what else she's been in, yeah.
Well, as a fun fact, if you go back to the November 1987 issue of Playboy, she's in that. That can be your fan favorite. Yeah. So
right.
There you go. That's what you're into. Then, you know, you read it for the articles.
Thank you for the info.
Scott's like, yeah, I have that copy.
No, I was actually just thinking, I'd be interested in hearing your Mark. I'm really interested in hearing your critique of her because I think
we gotta
she actually,
get to it now.
For that role that she's playing, and I don't, you know, like, I love this movie, but I don't see it as... In terms of acting, like you've talked about, the dedication that Tom Cruise and other actors put into, you know, learning what they needed to learn technically to do this role and training for this role. I mean, you got to admire that. But just in terms of the, like, story and acting, it's not like Shakespeare, right? Like,
yeah.
This isn't, her role in this is probably on par with everybody else's. And I think she does an okay job with that role, playing who she is, playing who Charlie is supposed to be. So I'm really, well.
I was just going to say real quick, sorry to interrupt you, Scott, just that she put in that work too. I read that she shadowed the woman that went on to become like the highest ranking female naval officer or something.
Oh, yeah.
So she was doing the work also, even though she wasn't like actually in the plane, flying the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she took some rides there too, but let's the floor is yours, Mark.
All right, so I just, one, I didn't know why she'd be an instructor, which Scott, you kind of answered earlier. You said, okay, the civilian instructors. I don't think at the time, I don't think she was the best looking actress that's available, right, for a Tom Cruise role. I think she's too old for him, although she's only like 30 in this movie, but honestly, she would pass for like 40, if you ask me. I don't think she, I just going to rewatch it again, I don't find her like an attractive lead character.
Yeah, thanks. She's okay.
I thought that they had too drawn out of like these like love scenes with them. Like it was awful and awkward in my opinion.
It
was far too much. Oh, it was so dumb. It was so dumb to get like, so she was about 30 when she filmed this, right? Tom Cruise, I think, was like 22, right?
Okay.
So not a huge age difference, right? But you're 30 and you're an instructor at Top Gun, maybe. Like, do you have a PhD in astrophysics at 30? And like, suddenly you're telling these pilots how to do their job better. I just don't find that believable. Scott said earlier it seems like it is, but I would expect that instructor to be more seasoned, right? In which case, you wouldn't be with the student because now you're going to be a 20-year difference from your young student.
Didn't you say before, though, you thought, like, if Meg Ryan, like, was in that part, it would have been better? Like,
she wanted that part, but I think it would have been better for the romance scenes.
Okay.
But not believable as far as, like, you're not going to date an instructor.
Okay, I get it.
You know what I mean? You know, I don't know. Like I said, she's... there's a scene when she first gives Tom Cruise her number and she's like, he's taking a test or something. Oh no, I do this flight, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, lady, who the F are you telling me how to like fly my plane? Like, you're not even a pilot. Like, you walk around in a flight jacket, you know, you're the king shit. Like, you're here to evaluate is what they say. And then you're in here criticizing these pilots over actual Navy pilot instructors. And to me, I didn't like that at all. No, I wouldn't, if I'm one of these pilots, I'm not respecting anything this girl says, even though like your commanders tell you to, and you have to listen to her. But I'm like, oh, I shouldn't do the loop to loop. Like, okay, sure. And then I'd go do my loop to loop. I don't like anything about it. When we talk about bathroom break scenes, which we'll skip to, I'll tell you, like the dinner scene when he, after he plays volleyball, he goes over there. It's too long. He's listening to Otis Redding, and you know, it's a nice little, it moves the movie forward, but no, everything about it. I was like, yeah, this is gross. Like, this scene is gross. Then to make it worse, they replay the song twice. There's two scenes where they play Take My Breath Away.
Oh, like, yeah, it's like kind of playing.
They play in the background one, a bunch. And then you play it again when they're in the love scene. Like, you couldn't get another soundtrack song in there, like, mix it up a little bit.
Well, I was an original song for this movie. I forgot that.
Like, but
I
you didn't play it once and be memorable for that scene. Now it's like it's two scenes, and you're like, oh, which, I don't know. But I guess you could say they do that for Danger Zone at the beginning and the end. But,
all right, let me ask you, if they took out the romantic subplot of it, and Kelly McGillis was the same character, but instead was played by, I don't even know age-wise, who, like, it was a man instead, and there was no romance to it, but he was still, like, instructing them, even though he wasn't getting in the plane and everything. Would it have been as egregious to you, or, like, was that part of the factor? Was, like, who's this lady telling
you? Yeah, I mean, I get that you have to put a romance piece in this, right? So I get it, and then I don't know where else you'd insert that in there, because you're not right. Going to have him
take that bartender out. Like, you know, that was gone.
What's Robert Duvall doing this time? If he's suddenly the instructor, or, you know, or another Tom Skerritt character is like, hey, I'm this. Those guys are probably maybe two on the older spectrum, but
yeah, but I get what you're saying.
I don't know. Like, I get why she's in there. Like, from a movie perspective, you need a female to maybe get wives to join husbands at this movie, right? Or whatever. I just don't think she was a good fit. I feel like in 86, you can pick a lot of people. So Demi Moore was actually auditioned and almost got this role. Probably too young to be an instructor, so it wouldn't solve that problem, but it would solve the better-looking romance partner.
Okay.
Hands down. I'm just saying.
Get some high standards, Mark.
I'm just saying.
You know, Terrence, you asked a good question. I would say even if Kelly McGillis was still in that role, still playing Charlie, but there was no romantic connection, right? She wasn't the love interest.
Right.
Would you be okay with her in that role?
Right? Maybe. I'd probably be more okay.
Because I think this is a tough thing, right? With, especially you hear women actors talk about this, right? So it's like, it's not enough that they're a good actor or that they're good for the role. It's when you put somebody like that in the romantic interest role, now it's like, oh, well, is she pretty enough to be, you know, with him? Is she young enough? And we start having all these other standards that the female romantic interest has to stand up to. And like, how much of that, I think we got to be honest with ourselves as guys, how much of it comes down to, well, is she my type or not, right? Is that why I think she's, you know, do I personally think she's attractive? And is that why I think she's good in that role as the love interest for this guy? So I think it's, you really got to, when you're, if you're going to analyze movies, if you're going to do more than just watch movies and really analyze them, mm-hmm. you got to be aware of some of these dynamics and these challenges that women have when they're playing in these roles. Yeah, that's my playing devil's advocate for what you're saying.
Well, they spin Tom Cruise as this guy. He should have higher standards, I guess, is what I'm looking at. Like, so I'm just fighting for him in this case, right?
So you're his wingman. Well,
in this case, I'm his wingman slash Rio, right? But so when Meg Ryan first comes in and he's like, oh, he's always got like two or three girls or whatever, he's going to walk into that bar. And like, that's the one he chooses of all the women in the bar? Come on. Like, she even looked older there. You know what I mean? Like, so, I don't know. Maybe he just likes
some guys
cougars.
Like that.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, that's cool. You know?
And I got to say, I think she has one of the best lines in the movie and delivered perfectly when she's walking out of the ladies' room and she walks by Goose and she says, your friend is fabulous.
Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure.
He was magnificent, I think.
Listen, as an actress, she's fine.
He's like, right? Nah.
But her at 30 years old in that movie still doesn't look as good as Jennifer Connelly at 52 in
Listen,
Top Gun 2.
You're making an impossible
standard here.
Well,
okay, that's fair, too. That's fair,
too. Come on now.
But I'm just, those are my main nitpicks on this with her, because I feel like that was the one piece of the movie, and it's a minor piece because the movie itself is about planes and everything else, but that was the one piece I feel like I didn't like it.
It was the love scene for you. I know. It was too much.
It was awkward. Like,
yeah,
it was.
They
it was definitely awkward.
There's a couple of those in the 80s where they just took it a little with I don't know, the silhouette. True Romance had that a little bit. That was the 90s, but I feel like there's a good balance you can hit. They maybe went a little overboard on that.
I just think they could have done better. You know, shame on you, Tony Scott.
Oh, my God. Right. Moving on.
Moving on. So let's talk about some favorite scenes here. Was there something that you liked better than anything else, Scott?
You know, I think just in terms of how it was shot and the impact and just being a cool scene, what y'all were talking about earlier, that first scene on the deck of the Enterprise, of the aircraft carrier, just, you know, everything about that, both the way it was shot, the put together with the music, and how it connected with just like that being the opening scene and setting the stage for the movie. Yeah, I just think that was... It's still cool to watch today, and it was really well done.
Yeah. Okay.
I love the Top Gun Maverick opened the same way. It, like, a lot of things in that movie, like, if you were a little more cynical, you might be like, oh, they're kind of pandering. They're just kind of playing off the nostalgia of it. But I don't know. We've talked about this before. Like, I eat that stuff up. Like, when Top Gun Maverick opened and they're on the deck and you see all the Skittles or whatever, all the different guys doing their thing, it's like, oh, I'm back in that mode already.
My favorite scene was probably when they first rescue Cougar from the beginning, and they're being yelled at by Stinger is his name.
Yeah.
And he says, he's like, you screw up even this much, you'd be flying a cargo plane full of rubber dog shit out of Hong Kong.
You screw up just this much, you'd be flying a cargo plane full of rubber dog shit out of Hong Kong.
Like I said, anything with him is just gold. What's the other one he says there? And I guess I'm rolling into the quotes, but he's like, your ego is writing checks that your body can't cash.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, things like that, those are just super quotable shit for me.
Yeah, he's got good lines.
Yeah, I just love everything about it. Even when, like, Iceman goes up to him at the end, he's like, I don't think he's ready. And he says something to him. He basically says, hey, fuck off and go to your plane. That's what I heard. You know what I mean? Like, stop being a winebag piece of shit and just go do what I tell you to do. And that's what this guy brings. Like, he's that commanding in that
no nonsense type of role.
Yeah, yeah. I love everything about him. But specifically, that scene there is my favorite. The bathroom break scenes for me was, if I had to pick one, I'd say his first dinner date with Charlie. It was just, like, I get it. Like, it moves the plot forward. But, you know, you're looking at this... we'll call it a brochacho type movie. Just a lot of testosterone going on, and you throw this in there, and I'm like, okay, like, I don't remember the actual runtime of this movie, but
I think it was like 140 something.
Okay, well, let's make it 136 and cut out 4 or 5 minutes of this awkwardness, or have more leading up to that. You know, at this point, like they talk in a bar, awkward conversation in the elevator or whatever, and next thing you know, like, oh, I'm in love with you, and hearts are breaking tonight. It's like. What? Like,
well, they tried to earn it. They tried to give him a little more excuse. But I agree. I mean, I don't hate the scenes like where he's at her house, but in a movie that like you're just waiting for the next dogfight and the next aerial maneuver, like that, if you're going to skip something, that's what you would skip.
I like the voiceovers with Jester, Michael Ironside, I think, does a lot of the voiceovers, like, okay, gentlemen, hop 31. This is what we're doing. You know?
Yeah.
And that's what the instruction they're getting. I think I know the answer to this one, but any better title that you guys have come up with besides Top Gun?
Can't.
No? I think the sequel, we all know, Top Gun 2, questionably the best sequel ever made at this point. Like,
it's up there, man. That was an awesome experience. Going to see it in the movies and, like, I love when it's actually good and they take something from, like, 20, 30, 40 years ago and you've got some of the same people in it and the plot continues from the original and, like, they just nailed everything with it. Plus, they just had all this additional technology and budget and everything to where they could really do it up. Like, the flying scenes were unreal in that. Like, when I first heard about it, I was like, yes, oh, that's amazing. They're making a new Top Gun. And then when I saw it, I was like, wow, that was, like, beyond what my wildest expectations could have been for it.
You enjoy Top Gun, too?
Yeah, I think for any reason why somebody who enjoyed Top Gun would go and see a sequel, you think of any of those reasons why somebody would want to go see a sequel, I think Top Gun 2 nailed it. Yeah. Yeah. And gave people everything they would want.
Watching them back to back, you see the difference in like camera quality from what, 40 years ago, almost 40 years ago, you know, just from the opening scene. Like, so the opening scene starts off very similar. Well, the first one, I wouldn't say it's grainy. It's not grainy, but it's not HD when they're filming it, you know, and then you watch it now and you're like, oh, wow, like, look how clear that is. I feel like I just put my glasses on and now I'm seeing it for the first time. Yeah. It was really good.
I actually read, I think the Top Gun, the original Top Gun was filmed in a smaller format film camera than is usually used for movies because the bigger format camera wouldn't fit in the planes properly.
Oh, wow.
So they decided to film the whole movie in this smaller than normal format, which doesn't give you as good a film quality just for that reason.
We don't often think about like just the logistics of making a movie and everything, but like to make this movie with all the flying and everything that had to do with the planes and how to make it all fit and make it all work and be visually pleasing, like it's pretty incredible.
So for did you look up any of the potential alternate castings?
There's some interesting ones. I know John Travolta was supposed to be Maverick at first. He was coming off of Saturday Night Fever, and I could kind of see that. I mean, he's got a little bit different energy than Tom Cruise, but back at that time, like before, like Travolta, whatever's gone on with him since then, like back when he was like one of the coolest guys there was. So
yeah.
I could see it. Tom Cruise better fit, but I could see why they went with that or why they wanted to go with that. Go ahead, Mark, while I'm looking.
Well, the one that I'm glad they definitely didn't go with was Matthew Modine was considered for the role.
So he turned it down because he didn't. And actually, that was one of my interesting tidbits was a few people like declined to be in the movie because of the whole
I thought it was a political thing.
War positive.
Well, and you got to say this about the movie. It is basically a Navy recruiting movie.
Yeah.
That's turned into like a Hollywood movie. I mean, it shows, it's not like Saving Private Ryan where it's showing like, hey, this is what, because people have said, you probably know this, people have said like that opening scene in Saving Private Ryan,
realistic.
That's showing you what it's really like to be in a war. And Top Gun is glorifying it, turning it into an action adventure movie. And yeah, there were some actors who objected to that aspect of it.
Charlie Sheen really wanted to be Maverick, and he didn't get it. So instead, he did the parody. Remember the parody he did?
Oh, Hot Shots. Hot Shots.
Mm-hmm. So he did his own movie for it instead.
It's been a long time since I've seen those, but yeah, Hot Shots Part Deux, I remember was a real funny one back in the day.
For the Charlie character, I mentioned Demi Moore auditioned for it. Ali Sheedy, I think, she was in the mix at some point, too. So I don't know, in 86. Both of them, like I said, probably too young to be an instructor. Better for love interest. If they went a different direction, it's like, I don't know, do you have her pick someone up in the bar? I don't know. I don't know how you'd spin that. It would have been even more wasted scenes if you forced a love interest that wasn't built into the plot. So I don't know. So Viper, they were considering Louis Gossett Jr., who would have been a great Viper, I think. And then also John Voight. Was another one. Like either one of those guys could have pulled off that role. So Louis Gossett Jr. was in. You ever seen Iron Eagle?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. No. Officer and a Gentleman, though, he was in that same kind of.
He's got that same. So Iron Eagle, he was a very similar character. I think I don't remember the year that came out. He was a flight instructor, I think, on a military base, and a couple of kids that lived there. Like their dads they were POWs, and then they were training to go rescue them.
Okay. This came out after Top Gun, I assume, right?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up. I want to say it came out before Top Gun, to be honest with you.
Okay.
The soundtrack for this, obviously awesome, right? We talked about this. Did you realize all the songs that Kenny Loggins has done over his career?
Have you ever looked into his stuff? The master of the movie theme song, yeah.
Yeah. So he's done, obviously this, he does Danger Zone. He does Playing with the Boys. He's the soundtrack for Footloose. He does a song on your favorite movie.
Caddyshack.
Boom, there it is. Yep. he does a song in Over the Top.
The arm wrestling movie.
Maybe Halfway, yep. I didn't realize this, too. I was looking it up afterwards, but he does a song in Rocky IV. It's called Double or Nothing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I think the robot plays his music like he's out washing his car. I think that might be that song. I'll have to go check it. But I listened to it, and I'm like, you know, it's definitely that 80s sound.
Speaking of bathroom break scenes, the robot in Rocky IV.
Well, did you want the remake? They took it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so... But he has a whole handful of songs, too. If you look at his stuff, so I'll give a little shout out to Cousin Sean. He said he was listening to an episode of Kenny Loggins was on the Dana Carvey and David Spade podcast. Okay. And he gets into that. He talks about how he didn't get writing credit for Danger Zone because he was involved in writing it or something. But it's something with for them to win an award, you can only have two names tied to it.
So they
left him off. And he's like, well, put me as a producer on it. And then they forgot, and for 10 years, he didn't get paid any royalties for this. Yeah.
One thing I read, too, was he wasn't the first choice for Danger Zone or for this soundtrack. They went to Toto, Africa, and Hold the Line fame, REO Speedwagon.
Yep.
And, supposedly, they turned it down because they wanted more of their own original music also in the movie. And so they were like, yeah, we're not going to be involved.
They brought in these other artists, and they did a screening of the movie with no music. And the opening scene, he's like, well, everybody's going to write for that. So he chose Playing with the Boys first.
Oh,
and he wrote that song first. And he's like, well, that's going to be our song. And then I think everyone else kind of thought the same thing, and no one did anything with the danger zone.
Interesting. Wow.
So
okay.
He kind of rolled into that and got it both. So Kenny Loggins, he's the man.
Yeah.
Even today, like if you listen to his music, I mean, Scott, you got to be a Kenny Loggins fan, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's done some great, great music over the years, you know, for films and outside, just in his own music career.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is he still doing new stuff? Like, does he still do any movie? I feel like I haven't heard, it's like of this era that I hear.
That's a good question. Like, I don't know that. We'll ask him when we get him. We'll get him on the show and we'll,
there we go.
We'll ask him. Yeah. I don't know. What are the tie-ins? Scott, didn't you say your father-in-law or something was on one of these?
Yeah. Like, can I tell that story? And honestly, if you want to cut out any of the other blah, blah, blah I've been doing to share this story just for time, because I think, a really cool story. So, yeah. My wife and I have been together for about 10 years. Her father, unfortunately, passed away a number of years before that. I never met him. So he served as an officer on the USS Oriskany aircraft carrier in Vietnam.
The Oriskany?
The Oriskany.
Oriskany, okay.
Oriskany, yeah, which is mentioned in the movie. There's a scene where Maverick and Viper are at Viper's house, and Viper tells a story of how Maverick's dad died. Yes. He says, we flew together on the Oriskany. So that's the whole tie-in there.
There's a bunch of
tie-ins. Yeah, it's really interesting. So my wife's dad graduated from UNC Chapel Hill, became an officer in the Navy, was accepted into flight school, and graduated from Pensacola, which is where the Navy does
their... Terrence likes him already for UNC.
I'm in, yeah.
So he's hooked.
Yeah. Pensacola is where naval aviators go through their initial, you know, primary flight training. So my wife's dad graduated, Mr. Green graduated from there, Lieutenant Green. Went to Kingville, Texas to learn to fly fighters, which is where the Navy trains their fighter pilots. He was apparently very good at landing. I got this story from my wife's mom, from Mr. Green's wife. He was apparently very good at landing on aircraft carriers, but not very good at flying with instruments, which, like, if you ever go on a commercial flight, you take off at night and it's raining, pouring, and you're thinking, well, how do the pilots even see? They don't.
Right.
Like, they're flying planes strictly, and you picture now flying a fighter plane, practicing combat missions, flying totally on instruments. So apparently he had some trouble with that. And I think from what the story I've heard, it was not a crash, but some kind of incident where, you know, pretty serious incident. So he decided to drop out. And I think what he told his wife was, I need to quit doing this before I kill somebody. So, you know, very concerned about you know, that aspect of it. But again, still an officer in the Navy. He became a CIC officer, which is Combat Information Center, which if you see the scenes in Top Gun when they're like inside the ship and they're monitoring what's going on in the air and it's like all the radar screens and the radios and control room. Yeah, control room. Well, that would be like the Combat Information Center. That's kind of what it looks like in there. So that's what my wife's dad did in the Navy on the Oriskany, USS Oriskany during Vietnam. Got out of the Navy, and so, and again, another interesting tie-in to Top Gun. So years later, Top Gun comes out. They all go and see it in the movie. It's Mr. Green's favorite movie, or one of his favorite movies. And then a few years later, he's on a business trip here in North Carolina, walks by this video store, and this is in the old VHS days, right? So, you know, back in the VHS days, in the early days anyway, you didn't necessarily buy a movie because they were like $100. You know, you got your VHS player and you would go rent movies and then record stuff off of TV.
Of course.
Yeah. You know, because movies, and I forgot this, my wife was telling me the story the other night, that, you know, VHS tapes were like $100 if you wanted to buy a movie, right?
That's when they first came out.
When they first came out. Yeah. When movies were first available on VHS tapes. So Mr. Green is walking by this video store and sees Top Gun on sale VHS for $20 if you get a membership. So he's in this state he doesn't live in. They live outside of Atlanta. Goes and gets a membership at this video store that he's never going to go back to again just so he can get his VHS copy of Top Gun.
Perfect.
And my wife still has that tape. And she to save the VHS tape, she burned it onto a DVD. And the other night when we were watching this to prepare for this podcast, we actually watched that version, the DVD version from the tape that her dad bought in that video store.
Yeah. Nice.
So that's kind of it's very definitely, you know, my wife still talks about Top Gun and remembering it as her dad's favorite movie.
Oh, that's awesome.
And apparently the biggest problem as a naval aviator that he had with the movie, technical detail, is that they took their oxygen masks off all the time. Because you want to see the actors' faces, right? You don't want to sit there and watch their guys. So for the purpose of the movie, they were always taking their oxygen masks off. But he said that you would never do that when you're flying, which makes sense because, you know, they're flying along at 10,000 feet. All of a sudden something happens, they're going to go up to 20,000 feet. In a couple seconds.
You don't have time to
snap your mask on and off all the time. So, yeah.
Anything else that you remember that he would say what they wouldn't do?
Like they wouldn't date an instructor, for example.
I mean, I could see that just from like a lot of, yeah, different experiences. But yeah, like I think that's one thing in the movie that's probably glaringly unrealistic is she even says, like, I don't date students, but I think that would be seriously frowned upon her and her position.
She'd be fired.
Yeah.
The heart wants what the heart wants.
And the Navy wants what the Navy wants.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
And Navy trumps heart.
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. That's awesome that he like loves this movie.
Very cool story.
We definitely didn't know that before we, had signed you up for Top Gun or whatever. So, but I'm glad that works out well. I'm glad that your wife was into it too. Like you got to sit down and watch it with her and just like, it's got nostalgia for her in a different way, you know, which is nice.
Yeah. And there are a few like Easter egg things, like Sundown is one of the pilots.
Yeah.
The guy he flies with Maverick after Goose dies. And there's actually a naval squadron, Sundowners.
Oh, wow.
I think it's VF-111 is the Sundowners. They're like a very well-known historic, naval aviation squadron. And that squadron was actually stationed on the Oriskany when my wife's dad was on the aircraft carrier. Geez, that was one of the fighter squadrons, on that ship at the time.
I love when they do that. You know, it shows the research. Like I said, just the story that Tom Skerritt's telling mentions an actual carrier. It ties it together because if he doesn't mention that, maybe you're not telling the story. Maybe you're not like, maybe your father-in-law is not thinking the same thing or whatever. So that's cool. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thanks for giving me the chance to tell the story.
What else for you, Terrence? Anything that you care to share with the class?
Well, we haven't gone over our best lines yet or what our call sign would be if we wanted to.
Because I spit out some of mine. So yeah, why don't you give me your quotes? What quotes you...
Well, you mentioned one, which I think would be my favorite, was if you think you're dead. I love that one. That's short and sweet.
What? No, would I say that?
Didn't you say that earlier, that quote?
No, why don't you start us off?
Oh, you go. Well, I don't know. if you think you're dead.
That's a quote? I remember hearing that in the movie. If you think you're dead?
Yeah, Maverick says that to Charlie. Am I not? I can't wait
to hear this podcast because I swear you said that earlier, like an hour ago. We'll see.
Okay.
This one, I had to say this one because like there's some like the Need for Speed and all that different stuff that are remembered. But this one just killed me. Meg Ryan, when they're all hanging out together, she's like, hey, Goose, you big stud, take me to bed or lose me forever. It's so cheesy, but I love it.
All right. Well, I guess that adds one nitpick because then Charlie tries saying that back to Goose later. I mean, to Maverick later. It doesn't have the same flair.
Yeah, no, Meg Ryan, she didn't go for it the way Meg Ryan
did. I'm adding to my hate list. That's it. Thanks. Well, Scott, what do you think? I know one because you emailed it to me prior to the show today.
Yeah. See, I still say the best quote in the movie is when Charlie's walking by Goose after coming out of the ladies' room and she says, your friend was magnificent. Like, that's just like played so well.
His reaction. Yeah.
His reaction is what sells it the best.
Yeah. Good acting there.
But the one I was thinking of was the negative Ghost Rider, Patton is full. You know, I think that's one that a lot of people say, along with Need for Speed, you know, that's...
Yeah, I feel the need.
The high fives, speed. You know, that's...
Too close for missiles, I'm switching to guns.
Yeah.
Oh, apparently trivia, I read this somewhere, read it on the internet, don't know if it's 100% true, but apparently at the actual Top Gun school, there is a $5 fine on the spot for quoting the movie.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm sure that would get old in a hurry.
That would get super old.
Yeah, considered unprofessional, and nobody wants to hear that crap there. So,
yeah.
Especially the instructors. Like, you come through with a new class every couple months or whatever. I'm wondering in real if they repeat themselves as much as they do in this movie. It's like, so like Iceman and Maverick, I'm taking the shot. I'm switching the guns now. I'm going to switch the guns.
Like the constant stream of consciousness. Yeah,
they're saying everything twice, and I don't know if that's like built into like Navy speak. You know, like at first I'm like, I find it kind of annoying. But then the more I thought of it, I was like, well, maybe they're doing it. They're letting the command center know like what's happening.
Yeah. Constant updates. And
yeah.
Stuff.
If you were to listen to, if they were to do realistic, like what the pilots are saying to each other or over the radio, they would lose people really quickly. So a lot of that is scripted to communicate an idea, even though it's not technically what somebody would say.
Okay.
Yeah. In the cockpit.
Shorthand in a little bit.
Yeah.
So, okay.
What would you guys call signs be if you had some time to come up with one?
I don't think I'm cool enough to come up with one. Like if I, I think I might have to circle back to this at some point, but I don't know. I don't know that I'd have one.
I go with ace. You know, my poker background. I think that's just a cool, cool flight sign.
Mark, I'm going to say you actually, I think, nailed it in the true spirit of what call signs are about, because I think people don't know this. So like when you get a call sign in the Navy, your buddies give you that name And it's often based on something embarrassing. Like they're trying to embarrass you a little bit. So okay. They all sound really cool, but there's some story behind it. And it's often something that's embarrassing to the person who's given that name.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a reminder. It's almost like, hey, stay humble, because it's like a reminder of that. But then they, you know, they take ownership of that. They take that as their name. So mine might be Charlie. Like you said, Mark, because like I was saying, yeah, I got to do some of that work as an expert, you know, advisor and trainer. And so like, yeah, you call me Charlie, like because that's the female character in the movie, right? So you're going to give me that name and to make fun of me. That would actually be fairly accurate, I think.
All right, okay. Mark, we got to give each other then. I got a good one for you then.
Okay, let's hear it.
Your lover boy. the love scenes is not your thing.
Yeah, there you go. Good one, Terrence. Perfect.
Oh, man. All right.
All right, Mark, call sign lover boy.
Oh, boy.
It's stick.
I think that
he's going to think of a good one to stick me with.
I'm going to need some time on this. I don't think maybe I'll edit it in.
He's
going
to be up late tonight coming up with the one that really
it's going to come to me. It's not going to be Ace, I'll tell you that.
I got one for Terrence, since you are a professional writer. Eraser.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Whiteout. Either Whiteout or Eraser.
Oh, I like that. That's got an even better ring to it, I think. Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
Yeah, I hate going back and changing my stuff. So that's, like you said, the fit of something that's like almost like a little negative behind the scenes, but like you're going to own it and it like belongs to you. I like that a lot. That's good.
I dig it. I like in Top Gun 2 where, you know, the Glenn Powell's character is Hangman. And like the whole thing is the girl who plays, she's Phoenix in this. Yeah. Like, oh, you know why we call him Hangman? And then like he leaves his wingman, you know, and she's like, because he leaves everyone, he hangs out to dry. You know, and so it kind of fits what you're saying, is that they're given that name and you start thinking about, you know, Goose is kind of the goofy character in this. So someone called them like Mother Goose or Goose or something, right? So it's interesting.
I like in the new one, they've got a lot of cool sounding call signs, and then you got Bob. His call sign is Bob.
I love it. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining on Top Gun. This was a lot of fun. We went through a lot of stuff. I mean, this movie was worth it. This movie had a lot of good things in it. I think anyone who's seen this movie and seen Top Gun 2, I mean, the whole family of Top Guns here.
And they are making awesome. Another one, right? Am I right in thinking that? I'm pretty sure they signed on to do another one with
They're in talks. Yeah.
Tom Cruise, Miles Teller, Glenn Powell. So I'll be there day one on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay if they do that as long as they put the same effort in.
Yeah, I think they would. Tom Cruise is
he's crazy.
He's going all out, or he ain't doing it at all.
I'd say he doesn't do sequels, but Mission Impossible.
Yeah, you can't say that.
He does sequels. He's the sequel guy. Awesome. All right. Well, Scott, Terrence, thank you for joining on the Double Take, and we'll see you guys next time.